are on air for our Fan for Racing Radio podcast for today. Today we are discussing our Phoenix NASCAR weekend preview, as well as our Hot Topic sound-off with our Fan for Racing crew. And speaking of that, we have Brian Eberle here today as co-host. So welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. Happy Thursday. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. All right, we are going to start off. We'll talk about some short track news and upcoming races. Then we'll get into the ARCA Menards and ARCA West Series season opener, the same race, two different series, at Phoenix Raceway this weekend. We'll include a brief ARCA East update as well. And then we'll get into the update of the NASCAR Truck Series. They're not racing this weekend, but we will update you on some of the news there. And then afterward, I think Brian and I might do a little bit of a fantasy review, or preview, if you will, for the upcoming weekend for the Xfinity Series as well as the Cup Series. And then we'll preview both of those series. Of course, we end our episode with the Hot Topic sound-off with the Fan for Racing crew. And it sounds like Mike is going to be joining us for that conversation. So let's go ahead and get started with some short track news, Brian.
Yeah, and I think the biggest one, I think this week kind of comes from the dirt world, and that was Donnie Schatz picked up his 500th career win, which is obviously incredibly impressive. Schatz off to a good start there in the World of Outlaws Series season.
Absolutely. And if folks want to read about that, they can go over to theworldofoutlaws.com. Alex Knighton writes about that, and you can learn more. In the short track world, there's a 30-car field to kick off the car's late model stock tour season. That's always exciting when they kick off their year. And that's going to be out at Southern National Motorsports Park. Short Track Scene has kind of a preview of all of that if you want to look at the entry list. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to follow this weekend.
Yeah, I think so for sure. Coverage on Flow Racing, so it's always great. I'm a Flow subscriber and a big fan of Flow, so it'll definitely be up on one of the TVs this weekend. Definitely some solid short track names in the field. I'm really looking forward to see what Brent Cruz does this year. Obviously got Stephen Massey in the field. He's always kind of one of the go-to favorites when it comes to that. Carson Cavapo, I always mispronounce the last name, running in the number 8 car. So some good names to get the season kicked off. 30 cars should be a fun time at Southern National Motorsports Park.
And if you are interested in watching that or going to the race for that matter, it's at Wacama, North Carolina. It's a 0.400 mile track. They'll be racing 125 laps on Saturday, March the 9th at 4:45 p.m. Eastern time. Brian already mentioned that it's going to be over on Flow Racing, so that's pretty cool.
I do have one quick update on that. I just saw as I was looking at something. I thought I saw this yesterday, and I wanted to confirm, but it's a very dire weather forecast for Saturday, so they've actually moved the race date to Sunday already. Flow's broadcast is set to begin at 12:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, still 30 cars on the entry list. No pre-race practice on race day, unlike the original weekend schedule, but they are slated to run the races on Sunday. Sounds like Sunday's got a much better forecast. They'll have single-car qualifying followed by the 125-lap main event. I do kind of like, I feel like racing series are trying to do that more. It's so hard when it comes to the weather. It could change 14 times between now and Saturday, and you never know. But when they can look at it and be pretty confident it's going to be a washout, at least that allows, you know, fans to come out to the track and waste the day. Kind of hopefully they can change their schedules and make it on Sundays. I feel like every year just the weather gets worse and worse for races. Maybe I just follow it more. Maybe it gets talked about more. But I feel like so many events continue to face these weather delays. But I like the fact that they're at least looking ahead and kind of making that call. And hopefully everyone can make it out there Sunday and it's hopefully beautiful weather.
Very good point, Brian, and thank you so much for that update. And anyway, I know folks are going to want to watch that race this weekend, if it's at all possible. Some other news that we have here is that it's time to get your tickets for the Chili Bowl Nationals. And that's going to be at the Saginaw Center out in Tulsa. Sales begin March 6th, so that was yesterday. You can get a four-day pass for $245, a five-day pass for $305, or the six-day pass for $356. That sounds like your best bang for your money there for the Chili Bowl Nationals. So you can phone them at 918-838-3777, or you can go over to the ChiliBowl.com website and see if you can get your tickets there as well. So deadline to renew is April 10th of this year, so you want to try to get in on the best seats with the earliest possible chance to go after those tickets.
Yeah, and that's always a super fun event to kind of kick off the year every January, so I'm hoping to make it back there myself in 2025. I haven't, it's actually pre-COVID, so I haven't been down there since 2019, but I've been several years in a row. Prior to that, we got my dad and some of his friends have tickets, so we got I'm pretty sure he probably was already all over it and put our renewal in yesterday. So should be good there at least. But yeah, looking forward to that. If anyone's ever been, that's a really, really, really fun event and great and a great week of racing.
Absolutely. Now, Roku Channel and Racing America came out with an announcement this week. Race fans can now tune in to Racing America 24/7 with free streaming on their channel now on the Roku channel. So that's kind of really big news because a lot of people may not be able to invest in the subscription, but they can still watch some of the racing over at Racing America. So if you've got a Roku on your TV and you've got access to the free Roku TV channel, Racing America is now going to be available there. So that's cool news.
Yeah, always. Never a bad thing when there's more motorsports coverage available, especially for free. But, yeah, love to see more opportunities for streaming and more things to get out there and to be able to watch it more. Obviously, we all love to be at a racetrack every weekend, but that's not possible. So when you can't be, it's great to be able to watch it at home and catch some laps wherever you can.
Absolutely. I've got a bridge article that we'll get to in a few minutes before we get over to the Arkham and Art series. But I'm going to real quick check some articles over here at Racing America, Flow Racing, and Short Track Scene. There's a video of the new episode of Mics Are Hot with guest Haley Deegan if you want to check that out. It's there's a question and answer from fans and an interview with Haley Deegan is on that episode if you want to check that out. Have you listened to that at all, Brian?
I have not. I've been meaning to, you know, add that to a list of things that I wish I had time to listen to. I feel like there's so much great motorsports podcasts and video content out there these days. I really need someone to go through every week that has time to watch it all and rank like what a couple best ones of the week are so I can catch those.
Yeah.
But definitely want to give that a listen. I think I forget who the hosts are.
It's Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Alanis Morissette and Monica Palumbo.
Alanis King, you mean? Yeah. Yep. Monica, yep, that should be good for sure. Yeah, and Haley Deegan,
yeah,
good episode there. Obviously, I think she's off to a fairly good start. I feel like for her in the Xfinity series this year, and for, you know, some people around the industry say, you know, maybe the Xfinity car is a little bit better suited to her driving style than the truck. So it'll be interesting to see how she progresses there, running the full season at the Xfinity series level.
Also, I thought this was a great article for race fans of short track racing. Racing America is launching Racer Travel, offering all race fans discounts on hotel travel planning. That's going to come in handy, Brian.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I saw that pop up this week in an email, and I haven't had a chance to look yet to see, you know, what the deals are like or how good they may or may not be. But I think that's nice kind of stuff in one place and some discounts. I know I think travel can be very expensive depending on where you're going and how you're doing it. And all of us try to, at least I do, always try to look to go as cheap as possible. So nice to hopefully have some discounts there and a little bit better value as fans head out to the racetracks this year.
Okay. Also on Monday, Sal and I let everybody know that the SRL National has been rebranded to the UARA National Series. And they've got 30 teams entered for the opener at South Alabama Speedway. Now, that opener isn't this weekend. It's scheduled for next weekend. But if you want to kind of get a heads up on who's on that entry list, you can go over to Racing America. There's always some big names on the national list. And I think Bubba Pollard is one of those people, if I remember correctly. Yeah, Bubba Pollard is on that entry list. Jeremy Doss, big name in the West. Stephen Nassi, just to name a few that kind of pop out at me right away. Any other names pop out to you, Brian?
Those are the big ones I was going to mention. And then kind of along those lines, maybe don't want to steal maybe your next topic, but just came through this morning that Bubba Pollard's going to race the ARCA and ASA Stars doubleheader in Pensacola coming up at Five Flags Speedway. I believe that's March 23rd coming up that weekend. So good news for him. He's been in the news a lot lately with inking a race deal with Junior Motorsports to drive at Richmond later this season. So good start to the year for Bubba Pollard.
It is. Family Funeral and Cremation adds a 5K bonus to that weekend if somebody is able to sweep those races. We're talking about that ARCA opener. That's the ARCA East opener at Five Flags Speedway. And the ASA Stars that is also going to be at that track. The Southern Super Series, the Deep South Crane Blizzard Series affair on Sunday afternoon, March the 24th. So if somebody can double up and win both of those races, there's a 5K bonus in the making for them. So that's pretty cool. You can read more about that. It's a press release that just came out this morning. But I'm excited for Bubba Pollard. He's getting a lot of recognition. And really, it seems like he's entered quite a few races to kick off the year this year.
Yeah, and I hope it kind of bridges that gap between, you know, short track fans and, you know, NASCAR fans and gets people interested in some more of the grassroots level stuff and out to their local short tracks as well. So a lot more out there than just, you know, the Cup Series that obviously, and rightfully so, gets a lot of attention. There's so much great racing at local tracks across the country, and it's great to see, you know, especially Dale Earnhardt Jr. kind of invest in some of those drivers with Josh Berry moving up through the ranks through Junior's program. And, you know, Bubba Pollard, don't know what might mean for the future for him, but at least getting an opportunity to show what these short track guys have and come mix it up with the Xfinity Series guys at Richmond.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on now. We've got a big doubleheader, I guess, if you want to call it that. It's two series, but just one race. So the ARCA Menards Series, it'll be the second series of the season for them, and the season opener for the ARCA West for the General Tire 150 out at Phoenix Raceway this Friday, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 6 p.m. Mountain Time. And it will be available live on Fox Sports 1. So that's pretty good for fans of ARCA. They'll race a distance of 150 laps over 150 miles. So looking forward to this season opener for the ARCA West and the second race for the ARCA Menards Series. Brian?
Yeah, and it's been a while, I feel like, since I've been this excited about an ARCA race. It's a great entry list, and I was just looking through it again, but I think there's 40-plus cars on it, which is pretty incredible, especially for a race all the way out west. So a lot of teams being more East Coast-based. Really great entry list. You've obviously got some of the ARCA regular or all the ARCA regulars running it. You got Grant Enfinger is on the entry list this weekend. Brad Perez is definitely a fan favorite. He's played his run the number 11 for Andy Hillenberg's team. Obviously, we've got Marco Andretti and running the full season this year. So definitely some big names there. Great entry list. Phoenix, I think, is a great track for Arca to be on and be at. So pretty excited to watch that one tomorrow night.
Yes,
well,
we'll
go ahead and go over the Arca news and notes for that race. And that will feature some other people that are going to be in that race as well. The general title 150 at Phoenix, again, is the second race of the Arca Menards Series and the season opener for the West, and it will count toward both championships. So the driver who wins will be credited with the win for both series, but points are going to be awarded to both of those series in that one race. Also, the race will be the 1,000th 555th in the Arca Menards Series history and the 1,017th of the Arca Menards Series West history. So some milestones to hit there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think another interesting point, when you look at the entry list, there's four female drivers that are entered. Amber Balsian, Toni Breidinger, Isabella Robusto, and Danica Dart. And we've got drivers from four different countries and 20 different states. Last year's runner-up in this race was Andres Perez from Mexico and Arca Menards Series West veteran Takuma Koga from Japan, and then Balsian and David Smith are both from Canada. And California has 12 drivers entered, so they are the leading state as far as where all of these drivers hail from.
Okay. Now, also, the general title will be the general title 150 will be the fifth race at Phoenix Raceway. Previous winners include Chandler Smith, who won there in 2020, Ty Gibbs won there in 2021, then Taylor Gray and Tyler Rice won there in 22 and 23.
And when we kind of look at some of the race history stats, the record for lead changes was Arca at Phoenix 8, and that was originally set in 21 and matched in 22 and 23, so looking to maybe break that. Coming up on Friday night, the record for most cautions was actually set last year with 13. So hopefully we see a little bit cleaner race than the 13, although the fewest cautions at Phoenix for Arca have been 7, which was set back in 2021. So probably going to have some good amount of cautions there with full field at a short track. But hopefully it's a pretty good clean show, and I'm really excited to see what Arca can do this year and kind of I feel like there's some good momentum for the series after a couple of years where it seemed like all we talked about week after week was how small the entry lists were. So hopefully this is a trend that continues and we continue to see some bigger entry lists for the Arca Racing Series in 2024.
Okay, well, it will be the 52nd West race at Phoenix Raceway, Arca West race. That dates back all the way to November of 77. And that race was won by Cale Yarborough. Another non-Cup Series combination race for West winners at Phoenix include Richard Petty, Neil Bonnet. They've got him listed here twice. Ron Eaton, Bill Schmidt, Rich Woodland Jr., Mike Wallace, Kevin Richards, Ken Schrader, Scott Lynch, David Gilliland, Bernie Lamar, I haven't heard that name in a long time, Andrew Myers, Joey Logano, Mike David, Jason Bowles, Eric Holmes, Greg Pursley, Ryan Blaney, David Mayhew, Michael Self, Greg Alding, Cole Cust, Todd Gilliland, Ty Gibbs, Taylor Gray, Sammy Smith, Tanner Reif, and William Sawalich. We've had several of those later drivers on our show here at Fan for Racing Radio, but that's quite a list of winners.
Yeah, a lot of varied names throughout the sport, so really cool to see, and hopefully maybe we'll see a new one come Friday night.
And Tyler Rice's victory last year was the first time that the Arca Menards Series West driver scored a win in a combination event. So that was a big night for Tyler Wright for sure. Okay, now should the race need to be extended into overtime, there will be unlimited attempts at a tap, green, white, checker finish. And should the caution flag be displayed after the white flag is displayed, there will be unlimited attempts at a one lap green and white together finish for those fans that will be watching that event. So anything that we missed there, Brian?
I think that was pretty good coverage of everything going on with the Arkham and Art series heading into this weekend. Like we said, for big ARCA series, their second race of the season and the first race for those West drivers to get things kicked off for 2024. So looking forward to it. Should be excited. Like you mentioned, coverage on FS1. So definitely tune in, and hopefully it's a good one.
Okay. Now, if you want to get to know some of the drivers that maybe you're not too familiar with, ARCA Racing has a really nice feature, and I believe this is up over at NASCAR Regional as well. Back and better than ever, Isabella Robusto's ARCA debut at Phoenix arrives behind schedule, but it will feature a stronger driver. So a really great article about Isabella Robusto. I believe she had an accident, but that's why it was delayed. But she is much stronger now, I guess, and she's definitely going to be somebody to watch this weekend out at Phoenix.
Yeah, that's a great story. Like I said, I didn't really know anything about her prior to the entry list coming out and that article. So always fun to learn something new about a different driver.
There's also a notebook over there that you'll want to look at. This Phoenix race is going to give Sean Hingorani his first chance to build off of his championship from last year. He is the defending champion of the ARCA West Series. But they feature some other drivers as well, like Grant Enfinger, William Sawalich, and some things that you can watch for from other drivers, like Tyler Reif, Marco Andretti, longtime West Series veteran, John Borneman III, and the four women that Brian referenced earlier. There's some really great coverage of a lot of the drivers that are going to be in this race over at ARCARacing.com. Actually, there's an article here, too, that I want to touch on real quick. Ryan Blaney is reflecting on his breakout West Series win at Phoenix Raceway that dates back to 2011. Another great article that you'll want to check out. And then they're also talking here about the late model ace, Bubba Pollard, to making his debut in that ARCA East opener that we talked about earlier out at Five Flags Speedway. So you can read more about Bubba Pollard over at ARCA Racing and NASCAR National as well, or NASCAR Regional, I'm sorry. The only other thing that I guess we'll bring up, and we've kind of already referenced it, and that is that the ARCA East is going to kick off their season on March 23rd out at Five Flags Speedway. Other than that, I think we've hit on everything, Brian.
Yeah, I think so. Some more news will be obviously hitting this week when ARCA gets another race under their belt, and looking forward to some hopefully good storylines coming post-Phoenix.
Okay, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but I'm going to go ahead and start with the NASCAR Truck Series updates. And then after that is when Brian and I will give some fantasy information for those people trying to figure out who they want to pick for this weekend. Let's start with the Truck Series, though. They're not racing, as I mentioned. Their race won't be until next weekend. They'll be racing the WeatherGuard Truck Series race at Bristol Motor Speedway on Saturday, March the 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. That will be covered on Fox Sports 1 starting at 7:30 Eastern. But let's hit on the notes here for the Truck Series, Brian.
Yeah, for sure, and I think nice to see the trucks back at Bristol on pavement, all of NASCAR back on pavement in the spring. I think many of us, at least myself for sure, are kind of glad to see the dirt experience at Bristol anyway go away from NASCAR, at least for the time being. But so, yeah, the Truck Series, obviously huge news for them coming out of Vegas with Araja Cruz picking up that first NASCAR National Series victory. It kind of goes with my trend of whenever I don't have a chance to watch a race, it's always a great storyline. So if I'm not able to watch live, probably means it's going to be a good one. So bummed I missed that one in person, but very excited to see the news of Raja getting that first win. So well received all around the garage area, I feel like, by everybody. Just 21 years old. It's the third African-American to win a NASCAR National Series race, joining NASCAR Hall of Famer Wendell Scott and, of course, Bubba Wallace. And that win, and really the whole season so far, has really kind of been great, great documentation to kind of back up the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program. Obviously, Raja, part of that program. Daniel Suarez got the win at Atlanta, which also kind of came up through the NASCAR Drive for Diversity. Nick Sanchez won for Rev Racing in the opener at Daytona for the trucks. And, I mean, it seems like forever ago, but Kyle Larson was also part of the Drive for Diversity program as he was coming up early in his career, and he got the win in the Cup race at Vegas. And then I think, you know, at least me, I kind of questioned a little bit, you know, with the Truck Series going to lose Kyle Busch Motorsports and GMS Racing coming into this year, you know, what would that mean? And Spire obviously bought the KBM equipment and moved their operations into their shop, and their trucks, or at least their affiliate teams, because they're affiliated with Sanchez and Rev Racing, they're 3-for-3 so far this year. So I think a great start for Spire, and really cool to see that they've kind of come out of the box very, very, very strong. And I think that's awesome, and a great start for Raja as well, DC native, his first truck victory, and gets a little bit of chance to kind of savor that because he doesn't have to jump into a truck again this week and can kind of enjoy that before they head to Bristol next weekend. So what are your thoughts on that? I'm sure you guys kind of covered it on Monday's show as well, Sharon, but with Raja's win, a big deal for the series for sure.
Oh, I think it was a big deal. I've had people actually ask me about it. Did I see that race? And isn't that great that, you know, Raja was able to win? A lot of people are already anticipating that he's going to be the next big thing in NASCAR. So that's the feedback that I've gotten from fans around where I live. And they're really looking forward to watching his career unfold. I think the other big storyline around Raja was that he got that big sponsor from Hendrick Motorsports with the HendrickCars.com. And I think people are real excited about that too. And seeing him get that kind of support, really, what I sense from people is that it really legitimizes Raja Carruth as the next thing coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, agreed. That's a great looking paint scheme as well on that truck. Very slick. So, yeah, really, really cool to see, and great start for him, and looking forward to seeing what he can do the rest of the season. Obviously, he's already locked himself in the playoffs with that win, so he'll definitely at least be some sort of a factor come playoff time for the Truck Series later on this year.
We mentioned that the next race for the ARCA Truck Series is going to be at Bristol Motor Speedway, so it's going to be some short track racing coming up there. There have been 26 Truck Series races at that short track. They've given us 21 different winners and 19 different pole winners. Six races were won from the pole or the first starting position, and the most recent driver to do that was Brett Moffitt. Cup Series regular and winningest NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series driver, of course, is Kyle Busch, and he's made the most trips to victory lane with 5 wins. He's also got the most poles with 4, and he's tallied the most top fives there with 7. Now, the veteran driver, Matt Crafton, has also made the most starts at Bristol. He's got 20 starts there, holding the record for the most top 10s at 14. Mike Skinner's led the most laps at that track with 562. Corey Heim is the most recent winner at Bristol after making a late race pass on Christian Eckes to get that victory just last September. So there's a lot to look forward to with that upcoming race out at Bristol Motor Speedway next weekend.
Yeah, and as they head to Bristol, take a look at the point standings. I think we talked about this last week. We were a little bit surprised after 2 races, but he's maintained it for the third week in a row, and that's Tyler Ankrum leading the point standing, driving the number 18 McNally Hilgerman Racing Chevrolet. Finished runner-up at Vegas, picked up another 42 points, and remains the points leader heading into the fourth race of the year next weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway. Kind of taking a look ahead to that. Ankrum, California native. His first trip to the track in 2019, he finished 20th and scored a track-best 7th-place finish in 2020. Finished a disappointing 23rd last year, so we'll pick that up a little bit, probably to maintain that point standings, because not sitting too far back from him is none other than Thor Sport Racing's Ty Majeski. Ty had a very, very strong run out at Vegas in the number 98 Thor Sport Racing Ford, leading a race out of 40 of those 134 laps, sweeping both stages. But unfortunately, a speeding penalty on pit road near the end of the race cost him the chance to win. But when they look ahead to Bristol, he does have a win there, came back in 2022. And so Majeski will look to be strong and take over that points lead coming next weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one to watch. Tyler Ankrum, I don't think anybody anticipated that he'd be at the top of the series point standings coming into this year, but he's had some strong runs. So even though he ran into some trouble there last year, I wouldn't count him out. We'll talk more about that later. But another driver that you want to keep an eye on this weekend comes from the IMSA series, the GTD Pro champion, and Vassar Sullivan Lexus standout is Jack Hawksworth. He's going to be joining forces with Tricon Garage to pilot the number one Mobil 1 Toyota Tundra for TRD Pro at the Circuit of the Americas on March the 25th. So watch for that later this year or later this month. In his eighth season of full-time IMSA competition, the 33-year-old has 11 wins, 10 poles, and 25 podium finishes. And he captured championships in the IMSA GTD Sprint Cup and GTD Pro Series. And he's a Lexus Racing factory driver that also secured high-profile victories in the RCF GT3, including Lexus and Vassar Sullivan's first win in that GT Pro category. That was at Road America and the first endurance victory of the 2022 Petit Le Mans. So in addition to his expansive sport car resume, Hawksworth has competed in three full-time IndyCar seasons, so he's well-known there as well. He earned a podium finish in 24 in the Grand Prix at Houston. The Bradford, UK native has also made a NASCAR Xfinity Series start in 2019 in the Mid-Ohio sports car course, and that was for Joe Gibbs Racing. He qualified on the outside front row and earned a stage win and ended up finishing 15th in that race. So super excited to see him teaming up with Tricon for that race at COTA, the Circuit of the Americas, later this month on March 25th. Going to be fun to watch and see what he does there.
Yeah, I think that was an interesting announcement, maybe a little bit of a surprise or just not expected, at least from my standpoint. So I think that's pretty cool. That number one mobile truck looks phenomenal as well. I think Hawksworth even mentioned that in his quotes coming out this week. That the truck looked great. He loves COTA. It's a fun technical track and should be very challenging to tame a stock car at, in his opinion. So it will be cool to see what he does there coming up. I think that's next month, right? When do they race at COTA? Yeah, I think at the end of the month, right? End of this month. So should be exciting. March 25th, yeah. So good deal for him.
Okay. Do you want to cover the Rookie of the Year rundown?
Yeah, so we've got a little bit of action going on in the Rookie of the Year standings for the Truck Series after three races. The leader of that is Connor Jones in the number 66 Thor Sport Racing Ford. He finished 14th at Vegas, the highest of the three rookie contenders, to give him the lead at 31 points over Thad Moffitt with 24 points and Lane Riggs with 23 points. Each of those three drivers has been the best finishing rookie in one of the three races so far this year. So they'll see you can kind of jump and take that lead when they head to Bristol Motor Speedway next weekend.
Okay. And on some of the latest news here in the Truck Series, Goodyear is going to host the test at North Wilkesboro Speedway. So that's coming up here. Let me see if March 12th is when they're going to have that test. And I believe it's going to be Ben Rhodes Heim and Christian Eckes from the Truck Series that's going to be taking care of that test. And then on the Cup side, it's going to be Joey Logano, Ty Gibbs, and William Byron. So Tire test date will be March 12th and March 13th. And then Speedway Motorsports, they repaved that. That's all in preparation for the races that will be taking there on May 18th and 19th, as well as the All-Star Open. So watch for those Goodyear tire tests to be coming up there for the truck series. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look at our fantasy picks for or people to watch for fantasy picks or some ones that you might want to consider as fantasy picks for the Xfinity series. I'm going to start with them first, Brian, and I'm going to go over the box scores for those drivers that are over 100 at Phoenix Raceway. They include a couple. One here, Ryan Truex, actually is not on the entry list for this weekend, but he does have in one race a box score over 100 at 101.6. But just above him is A.J. Allmendinger at 101.9. Then you've got Justin Allgaier. His box score there in four races is 102.2. Allmendinger has two races for his box score. Just Sammy Smith at 111 with three races. John Hunter Nemechek, three races. His sits at 115. And Cole Custer tops the list with two races at that track, 121.4. The best average finish of those drivers. Ryan Truex, of course, at two with just that one race. A.J. Allmendinger with two races at 6.0. Then you've got Cole Custer with two races at 6.5. And Sammy Smith with three races sits at 6.7. How does that ring out with your DraftKings odds?
That's a great question, Sharon. So we've got a pretty heavy favorite coming into this weekend in the Xfinity Series, and that's a name that we hear an awful lot on Sundays, one Mr. William Byron. He will be driving that number 1700 Motorsports car that they're entering in, I think, 10 races this season amongst their four cup drivers, as well as Boris Said's going to run a road course race. So William Byron's in that number 17 this weekend. He's at plus 240, so he's a pretty heavy favorite over Chandler Smith, getting the shot with Joe Gibbs Racing this year at plus 550. A couple of pretty familiar Xfinity Series names. Head next on the list with 6-1 odds. That's John Hunter Nemechek and Cole Custer, series regular Justin Allgaier at plus 650. Another name that we're used to hearing a lot on Sundays that we'll hear a little bit on Saturdays this year, that's Eric Almirola, running a little bit of a limited schedule. He's 9-1 odds. And then we've got Sheldon Creed, Sammy Smith, and Riley Herbst, all at 11-1. And, of course, when we look back at last year, we had Sammy Smith win the spring race there and Cole Custer win the fall race at Phoenix and ultimately the championship. And I would say Cole Custer would probably be my favorite heading into this weekend. I know he's not the DraftKings favorite, but I do think Custer will be very, very strong again, but it's going to be hard to beat that number 17 Hendrick supported car with William Byron behind the wheel.
Yeah, I kind of think another driver to keep your eye on this weekend is Sheldon Creed. He's got an average finish at that track at four races of 6.3. So that beats some of the folks that have the higher driver rating. But he does have a pretty good average finish there, so I think he could be a dark horse this weekend in addition to all the ones. And it's kind of surprising that we didn't mention Austin Hill in there as well. Austin has a driver average finish, and that's in four races of 10.0 as well. I think he could be another one that folks might want to keep their eye on this weekend.
I would agree with that, and I'm also excited to see what Jesse Love will do. Obviously, he's not going to show up on our fire stats given the year, but he's in that number two RCR Chevrolet. He's done well so far to get the season started. Ran really, really well in Atlanta. His odds are 20-1, which I think is fair given his rookie status. I don't know that he'll necessarily go to victory lane, but he does obviously come from that dirt background, has a lot of shorter track experience, and I will be excited to see how he fares getting a shot on the first shorter track of the season for the Xfinity Series.
Absolutely, and you bring up a good point. We don't have any stats to give you for Jesse Love. He is an Arkham and Art Series champion. I think he was really, really good in that series. He won, I think, half of the races of the Arkham and Art Series last year. So he definitely is one to keep your eye on this weekend as well. Okay, let's go ahead and move over to the Cup Series, because the Cup Series has some stars here as well when we look at average finish as well as their driver ranking. So from that perspective, some of the drivers to keep your eye on this weekend, Kyle Larson at 107.1. All of them have four races in the books for these stats. But also at 107.1 is Ross Chastain. So those guys are pretty much head and head. The difference, though, is the average finish. Kyle Larson has an average finish of 12.5, with Ross Chastain's average finish coming in at 7.5. And I think that's it's not the best, but it's one of the best. And then above them are two other drivers that you're going to hear a lot about this weekend. William Byron's rating comes in at 114.5. His average finish, 7.3, and above him is Ryan Blaney at 117.7 driver rating. His average finish, though, is 2.5. So I really wanted him this weekend, but I think somebody else got him before I could get it. but I think I did get William Byron. I might be wrong about that.
It's a solid pick to have for sure. I think those Hendrick cars are going to be strong. We'll take a quick look at the DraftKings odds. Probably no surprise, but the guy that's what's won last week in Victory Lane in Vegas, Kyle Larson's the favorite at +550, followed pretty closely by Ryan Blaney at +650. No surprise there. Penske's kind of been good on those shorter flat tracks. And then William Byron's got the third best odds to go to Victory Lane as of this morning on DraftKings Sportsbook at 7-1. The winner there last November, Ross Chastain's at 9-1. Denny Hamlin, always a factor, 9-1. Kyle Busch at 10-1. Christopher Bell, I'm surprised he's at 12-1. I thought he'd be a little bit higher up the board. Always runs well at those shorter flat tracks as well. Martin Truex Jr. and Joey Logano also come in at 12-1. And some interesting stat this morning, just hadn't really thought about it, but it's been 34 races since Joey Logano's been to Victory Lane. That was surprising to me. I was like, wow, it's been that long since he's won. But I went back to check that because you can't trust everything you see online. But, yeah, 34 races since Logano's been to Victory Lane. Another interesting one to call out here is Chase Briscoe. He obviously won back in 2022 at Phoenix. He's down there at 25-1. Obviously, SHR has had some struggles of late. Noah Gregson got them a solid finish last week with six at Vegas. So I'll be curious to see how the SHR cars run. Especially Chase Briscoe, who went to Victory Lane in that spring race in March 2 years ago. And when you kind of look at prior winners, already mentioned Chastain won last November. The spring race was won by none other than William Byron last year. And then we have Logano and Briscoe were your winners in 22, and Larson and Truex were your winners in 2021. So I think mentioned a lot of names, but I definitely think one of the winners comes from those names we've mentioned so far.
Yes, I was going to bring up Joey Logano and Chase Briscoe because they're one of the few drivers that have a pretty decent average finish at that track. Both of them also have four races at that track. So Joey Logano's average finish there is 9.5. Chase Briscoe has an average finish of 9.0. So if you missed out on getting one of those other drivers that we talked about, those are definitely drivers to consider picking this weekend as breakout wins for either one of those drivers. Joey Logano, you say 34 races. That almost is a whole season's worth of racing there. So Joey Logano is a previous champion. I would never count him out, especially at a track like like Phoenix.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the one wild card kind of heading into this weekend, and we'll touch on it in more detail as we get into our Cup Series preview, but they've got a new package for the short tracks and road courses. It's going to debut at Phoenix this weekend and run on all tracks a mile or shorter, as well as road courses, except for Bristol and Dover. Those are excluded but I'm not a super technical guy, but they basically kind of simplified the diffuser on that short track package, and will be interesting to see kind of who adapts. I definitely think the practice this weekend will be key to kind of watch and take a look at speeds just to see which team may have hit the nail on the head there with the changes and be a little bit ahead of the competition. So excited to kind of see those practice speeds and analyze that. Definitely check those out before you set any lineups for this weekend, and we'll see what happens.
Let me ask you this, Brian, real quick. Are there any drivers on this list for the Cup and the Xfinity Series that you feel could have a breakout win? Somebody we haven't mentioned yet that could possibly surprise all of us and come up with a breakout win?
That's a really good question. I mean, I guess I kind of touched on him already next to me, so maybe it doesn't count. I think Jesse Love could very well potentially get that victory. So I think he's still who I have to go with my Xfinity Series, even though we did touch on him a little bit. When it comes to Cup, that's a great question. I mean, I think we could see Ty Gibbs potentially get that first Cup Series victory. If I had to pick somebody out there, just, you know, obviously he's been strong in the Xfinity Series, still adapted to that Cup car. But I think if I had to pick somebody that we haven't touched on yet, I think Ty Gibbs would be that pick.
Yeah, I agree with you on both of those drivers, Jesse Love in the Xfinity Series and Ty Gibbs. I was just looking at Ty Gibbs when you said him, and I said, that's the one I would pick. So I think we're kind of of the same mind in both of those series. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to our preview of the Xfinity Series out at Phoenix this weekend, and I think you'll hear some of those names come up in this conversation as well. The race is the call, 811.com, every dig, every time, 200 at Phoenix on Saturday, March the 9th at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. FS1 will have pre-race coverage starting at 3:30 p.m. Eastern, and, of course, radio coverage will be on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance of 200 miles over those 200 laps, first two stages of 45 laps each. Stage 1 ending on 45, lap 45, and stage 2 on lap 90. The last stage is 110 laps ending on lap 200. So let's go ahead and get started with our Xfinity Series notes here.
Sounds great. First comment, that race name is just crazy. Got to love the sponsors and how large some of these plugs come out. So interesting. So anyway, the Xfinity Series now has a couple races under their belt, and they are ready to head, or three races under their belt, and ready to head out to Phoenix to get things started. So we kind of touched on some big names already for this weekend, so it'll be interesting to see if any of those guys end up in victory lane. But let's just take a look back. One big name that's always been pretty much holds every record possible at Phoenix is Well, Mr. Kyle Busch, not in the field this weekend, so won't see him win, but he does have the record for most wins at the track with a whopping 11, most poles 10, most top 5 17, tied with Kevin Harvick on that, most tops 10 21, lead lap finishes 24, and led a whopping 2,237 laps at the track, which is just crazy. The series is slated to hit the track on Saturday for practice at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time, followed by their qualifying session at 1 Eastern Time. That'll be on FS2 as well as SiriusXM NASCAR Radio.
Yeah, and I just want to mention here, too, 11 races have been won from the pole or the first starting position by 5 different drivers. The most recent, our dark horse pick, our breakout driver, Ty Gibbs, in the Xfinity Series race in 2022. So I think he's kind of turned a lot of heads throughout his career. So I think this weekend could possibly be another weekend that happens. Okay, there's a lot of winners at Phoenix Raceway this weekend. 5 drivers in the field have conquered that track and will be looking to add another one to their resume this weekend. They include Cole Custer, Justin Allgaier, Sammy Smith, Brandon Jones, and William Byron, who is on the entry list for the Xfinity series this weekend. And these are some of the drivers we've already mentioned. Custer, of course, is driving that 00. Stuart Haas Racing Ford. He's had 8 starts at Phoenix, posting 1 win. That was just last year. He's got 3 top 5s, 6 top 10s, and he's led 140 laps there. Custer is the most recent Xfinity Series winner at Phoenix, and so he's looking to become just the 3rd driver all time to win Xfinity Series consecutive races at that track. If he does it, he'll be joining the likes of Kyle Busch, who did it in 2007 and 8, and a 13 sweep in 2013. He swept in 2014, and he also won there in 2015 to 16, again with a sweep. Austin Cindric also won there between 2020 and 2021. Our next driver is Dustin Allgaier. He drives the number 7 for Junior Motorsports in a Chevrolet. He's got 27 starts at the track. He's tied for the most all time with Jeremy Clements. He's posted 2 wins in 17 and 19. That's the most among the active drivers this weekend. He's got 10 top 5s and 18 top 10s, and he's led 544 laps. Sammy Smith, driver of the number 8 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, has made 3 starts at the 1-mile track. He's posted 1 win there last year. He's got 1 top 5, 3 top 10s, and he's led 113 laps. Smith, of course, is the defending winner of this race, his only victory in the series. A driver, I don't think we mentioned Brandon Jones very much earlier, but he's the driver of the number 9 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet. He's made 16 starts at Phoenix. He's posted 1 win in 2020. He also has 3 top 5s and 6 top 10s, and he's led 59 laps. William Byron, probably the favorite to win this weekend. He's a NASCAR Cup Series star and Daytona 500 champion. He's going to be behind the wheel of the set number 17 for Hendrick Motorsports at Phoenix. He's made 2 Xfinity starts at the track, posting 1 win in 2017. He has 2 top 5s, 2 top 10s, and he's led a total of 17 laps. So those are some of drivers to keep your eyes on, and we're backing it up with stats for this weekend.
Yeah, and those are all 5 drivers could very well see in victory lane, no doubt. And we've got 4 guys that have a really good shot at also being there that haven't won before at Phoenix, starting off with Sheldon Creed this year driving for Joe Gibbs Racing in that number 18 Toyota. He does have 5 previous starts at Phoenix with 4 top 10s. And he came extremely close to taking that win last year, finishing runner-up in the championship race. New year, new team. I do expect Creed to still be strong. I definitely think he'll get into victory lane with JGR this year. Obviously, he had some issues and some frustrations with the RCR camp last year, and I'm just curious to see how he does as he progresses this season with a new team and a new environment that maybe is just a better fit and better suited for him. A driver that Sharon mentioned earlier, Austin Hill, driving for RCR in that number 21 Chevy. He's got 4 starts at Phoenix with 3 top 10s and has led 43 laps. Obviously, he took the first 2 wins of the season in the Xfinity Series, so could always end up back in victory lane and would definitely not be a surprise. Riley Herbst as well, in the number 98 Stewart Haas Racing Ford, 9 starts at Phoenix with 4 top 5s and 6 top 10s. And then a name we're very used to hearing in the Xfinity Series the last couple seasons, John Hunter Nemechek, back running full-time in the Cup Series, obviously with Legacy Motorsports, but running in that number 20 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota for Saturday at Phoenix, coming off the big win last weekend at Vegas, and he's got 7 Xfinity Series starts at Phoenix with 2 top 5s, 6 top 10s, and has led 168 laps. So another strong choice there as well. Creed, Hill, Herbst, and Nemechek. No prior wins at Phoenix, but could very well pick up their first Phoenix Xfinity Series victory on Saturday afternoon.
Okay, next we'll take a look at the Xfinity Series Rookie of the Year standings. There's a little bit of a shuffle here that took place. We've been talking about Jesse Love and how big he's been in the Xfinity Series so far this year. He has the lead. But Haley Deegan finished 15th last week at Las Vegas, and that moved her up to fourth in the rookie standings. Love also extended his points lead over Shane Van Gisbergen to 36 points. So now the class will be heading back to the West to give Phoenix 1 mile track a go. Jesse Love leads everyone in the Xfinity Series with 96 points. And this weekend, the race at Phoenix is going to be Jesse Love's track debut, so keep an eye on that. Shane Van Gisbergen will also be debuting at Phoenix this weekend. He's second in the battle and sits 16th in the series point standings with 60 points. Driver we haven't mentioned yet, Leland Honeyman Jr., he slides into third. He's 22nd in the series point standings at 40 points. He made his track debut at Phoenix last November, so that gives him a little bit of an edge, I think, this weekend. He started 23rd, but he ended up finishing 27th, but he's got some familiarity with the track. Dawson Cram rounds out the rookie class. He's 38th in the Xfinity Series standings with just 15 points. He's made three starts at Phoenix in the Xfinity Series, but his average finish there is at 29.3. But we'll see what happens with those two drivers that have experience. Haley Deegan, I think, has some experience at that track as well. Did I skip her? She's 27th in the standings at 33 points. She got that 15th place at Vegas last weekend. She's making her track debut this weekend. So only two drivers have experience at that track. The rest of our rookies are making their track debut this weekend. So we've got one other. We've kind of talked about this already, but let's kind of restate it because it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, we talked about it last week, talked about it earlier this week, but that's late model stand-up Bubba Pollard making his Xfinity Series debut. 37 years old and going to get his first shot behind the wheel of an Xfinity Series car when he hops in that number 88 Junior Motorsports Chevrolet at Richmond International Raceway coming up on March 30th. Pollard's won, I think, triple-digit late model races thus far in his career. He's very excited, doesn't know exactly what to expect, but just kind of looking to make the most of the opportunity. He's actually never turned any laps at Richmond before, and he's never driven an Xfinity Series car. So that very little bit of practice they get in the Xfinity Series these days will obviously be super important to Pollard to get adjusted, but he's obviously got some great people behind him to lean on for advice, including one Mr. Dale Jr. himself. So it will be fun to see and definitely will be something that everybody will be watching later on this month is how Pollard does and what his experience is like.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of buzz about that, and everybody is looking forward to it, as you mentioned, Brian. All right, we're going to move on to the NASCAR Cup Series. Always a lot of information to cover there. They'll be racing the Shriner Children's 500 at Phoenix on Sunday, March the 10th, starting at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Fox will carry the coverage with pre-race coverage starting at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, as well as radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. As always, that race is 312 miles, covering 312 laps. First stage is going to be 60 laps, ending on lap 60. Second stage, 65 laps, ending on lap 185. And I can't do the quick math here. I'm not that good. But the final stage ends on the last lap at 312.
This is always an interesting one with the 312 laps, just different than what we're used to.
Yeah.
A lot of number of laps.
All right, let's talk about the numbers at for the Cup Series out at Phoenix.
Yeah, so kind of just looking at the series so far this year, three races into 2024, and the next-gen car is providing some of the best racing I think we've seen so far. Obviously, we had kind of a couple of the super speedway races to start off, and I think the big question will be how it performs on the short track coming up this year. But so far in 2024, the average margin of victory is just 0.222 seconds. That's the fourth closest average margin of victory through the first three races of the season since they implemented electronic scoring back in 93 and just behind the series record set in 22 of 0.136. obviously at Atlanta. We've talked about this a ton, got a ton of press, but the third closest finish in series history when Suarez narrowly beat Ryan Blaney and Kyle Busch by 0.003 seconds. That was still a phenomenal finish. I'm going back and watch that probably 15 times since then. And that was a lot of fun. Can't wait to see something like that again later this year. Thus far in 24, we've had 407 green flag passes for the lead. That's the most of the first three races since the inception of the stat in 2005. Also just worth noting as a caveat, as I like to do with numbers, Atlanta wasn't this type of Atlanta until 2 years ago. So maybe a little bit misleading on that set there, but still 407 green flag passes for the lead. We want to see more passing for the lead. NASCAR's, you know, producing that so far. This season, they've also had 28 different lap leaders through the first three races. That's the second largest number of lap leaders through the first three races of the season. So we've seen a lot of different drivers out front a little bit here and there, which is great to see. I think, you know, Todd Gilliland leaned a bunch of laps earlier this year. Was awesome to see just some different drivers up front from time to time. Always makes it exciting. We're averaging 37.7 lead changes through the first three races of the season. That's the second most in the modern era, behind 2011, where they had 41. And there's been 23,027 green flag passes, the most of the first three races of the year since the inception of that stat back in 2005. And we've had three different point standings leaders for the first three races of the season for the first time since 2017. And last but not least, this is the 37th time in the modern era that the Cup Series has opened the season with three different winners at the first three tracks on the schedule. Will we see a fourth different one this weekend? I think there's a very, very good chance of that. I think a lot of people have a great chance at Phoenix. So I think we'll go 4-for-4 with winners so far in 24.
I think so. Now, you're right. We've got three different winners so far this season. And Kyle Larson is going to join his teammate, William Byron, as playoff drivers so far from the Cup Series. So William won the Daytona 500 winner was William Byron. The Atlanta Motor Speedway winner, of course, was Daniel Suarez. And Las Vegas, it was Kyle Larson. So the Las Vegas win also jumped Larson to the point standings lead. He's now up 8 points over Ryan Blaney, who is the defending 23 Cup Series champion. Larson is hoping to keep that momentum going at Phoenix this weekend. That track also is going to be the season finale, the championship race later on this season. So it's a pivotal race for a lot of these drivers. They're going to be trying to learn as much as they can from the track this week. Let's take a look at some of the stats for Larson. He's got 19 starts at Phoenix. He's put up two poles. He has one win there in 2021, eight top fives, 12 top tens, and his average finish at that track is 11.263. That actually is fourth best among active drivers this weekend. But I think this is going to be a battle of the ages, if you will, at Phoenix Raceway this weekend, because there's a lot of drivers who could end up on top, as we've kind of pointed out earlier. But Kyle Larson certainly wants to be one of those drivers.
And he's definitely got a great chance at that. As we mentioned earlier, the leader of the DraftKings standing or the DraftKings odds so far this weekend, so he's the betting favorite heading into Phoenix on Sunday afternoon. And a couple of drivers may not end up in victory lane, but have been off to a great start so far this year, and that's Legacy Motor Club. They obviously made the switch to Toyota in the off season, and, you know, numbers don't lie, it seems to be going pretty well for them so far. Both drivers are inside the top 16 in points, which is a great start to the season for both Eric Jones and John Hunter Nemechek. Anchored kind of that success, both finished top 10 at Daytona with Nemechek 7th, Jones in 8th. And both drivers are kind of looking to build upon that early season momentum. Jones has some pretty good experience at Phoenix with 15 starts, just 4 top 10s, though, and his average finish is 17.7. Nemechek has 3 starts at Phoenix in the Cup Series prior with an average finish of 26th. But a really good start for Legacy to get the year kicked off on three races in, still very early, obviously. But they've got to be pretty excited that they've got both drivers inside the top 16 and probably running maybe a little bit better than they were expecting, especially with the manufacturer change heading into the new season.
Yeah, you're right. Numbers don't lie. And, you know, I wouldn't look at past performance for these two drivers with that manufacturer change to Toyota. They've been doing really, really well so far in 2024. So I think they could turn some heads and could come up with some wins even this season. Okay, starting up front has its perks at Phoenix. As we know, track position means everything at a short track like Phoenix. A total of 23 different starting positions have produced wins, but the first and third spots are the most proficient starting spots at Phoenix Raceway in the Cup Series, producing more winners. 8 wins each from those positions, that's first and third, than any other positions on the starting grid. That's a win percentage of 14.55, including this race last season with the winner William Byron starting from that third starting spot. So that's something to keep eye on during qualifying. Whoever gets that first and third spot might have a little bit higher percentage of winning that race when it comes to the race this weekend. Veteran driver Ryan Newman and Richard Childress Racing driver Kyle Busch lead the Cup Series in poles at Phoenix Raceway. They both have those four poles. 27 different drivers have won the pole at Phoenix, and 11 of the 27 are active this weekend. As I mentioned, Kyle Busch and Ryan Blaney, Kyle Busch leads that as an active driver. Ryan Newman, of course, is not active with those four. Ryan Blaney has 3, Kyle Larson 2, along with Joey Logano, Martin Truex Jr., and Denny Hamlin. Drivers who have 1 pole at the track include William Byron, Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman, Brad Keselowski, and A.J. Allmendinger. So something else to keep in mind with regard to competition this weekend.
Agreed. And talk a little bit about who starts first and who wins the pole. And now let's talk a little bit about who's been in victory lane at Phoenix. In 55 Cup Series races at the track, there's been 30 different race winners. The leader of that won't be in the victory lane this weekend. He'll be up in the booth, and that's none other than Mr. Kevin Harvick, who has won 9 times at Phoenix. By far and away the winningest driver at Phoenix. When it comes to the active drivers currently, that's led by Kyle Busch, who was in victory lane at Phoenix 3 times way back in 2005, as well as in 2018 and 2019. And Joey Logano kind of goes with that even year streak that he likes to be on. And he's won in 2016, 2020, and 2022. And of course it's 2024. So maybe Logano will kind of keep that going this weekend. Denny Hamlin's been in victory lane twice. And then Ross Chastain, William Byron, Chase Briscoe, Kyle Larson, Truex Jr., and Chase Elliott all have 1 victory apiece at the track. 9 different drivers that are active have been to victory lane at Phoenix in the past.
Well, now the most recent winner at Phoenix, though, is Ross Chastain, and he's hoping to become the 7th driver to win consecutive races at Phoenix. He won there back in November, and now the Watermelon Man is turning over to the desert to defend his win and become that 7th different driver to win consecutive races at Phoenix. If Chastain does accomplish that feat, he's going to join the likes of Davey Allison, who was able to do that between the 91 and 92 seasons, Jeff Burton in 2000 and 2001, Dale Jr. 2003 and 4, Kevin Harvick had a 2006 sweep and then 4 straight wins there from 2013 playoff race to the 2014 sweep to the 2015 spring race. So Kevin Harvick is certainly the king of the track at Phoenix. Jimmy Johnson, the fall of 2007 and 2008 sweep, then Kyle Busch between 2018 and 19. So keep an eye on Ross Chastain. I'm sure he wants to accomplish that feat of becoming that seventh driver to win consecutive races at Phoenix and put his name on that list of prestigious drivers.
And we kind of touched on a little bit earlier in the show, but we do have a new package for short tracks and road courses starting this weekend. It'll be in place for all of 2024. Basically, they'll run a simplified diffuser at a majority of tracks that are a mile or shorter, as well as the road courses, excluding Bristol and Dover. And they did not use that simplified diffuser earlier this year at the Los Angeles Coliseum for the Clash. So just kind of some brief details on what that means. There'll be no engine panel strakes, a 3-inch spoiler, a simplified diffuser, and simplified diffuser strakes. Now, they did do a test at Phoenix during the off season. A little bit of a quote from Eric Jacuzzi, NASCAR Vice President of Vehicle Performance, and he had this to say about that test. They noticed an improvement in traffic. The car did not lose rear downforce when it yawed, which is an issue that they fight with the current car. The drivers will be able to slide around more on the short tracks and really have to be less careful about putting power down. They felt that would be a benefit, and that was the big takeaway from the driver feedback. At the test, they felt they could really tell that it was more forgiving, and they felt that they could slide the car. So ideally, we'll see a little bit more slip sliding around this weekend. What NASCAR has done is they're going to allow some additional track time to adjust to these new components. They made Phoenix Raceway with a term an extended practice weekend, so there'll be a 50-minute practice session on Friday at 3:05 p.m. local time. And that will be televised on FS1 from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. And then Busch Light Pole qualifying is still slated for Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Hopefully these changes will do what they intended. They did collaborate with drivers and teams over the offseason and try to make this something that could maybe work for everybody. I think, you know, probably the biggest disappointment so far with the next-gen car has been how it's performed on the short tracks. So hopefully these changes will allow something different to happen this weekend and maybe a little bit better short track racing that we were used to with the prior versions of cars.
Yeah, I think drivers and fans alike are looking forward to seeing how that plays out at Phoenix this weekend. It's a change that they've been wanting and looking for on both sides. And so pretty excited to see some positive notes there from NASCAR about the tests that took place there. Talking about spinning, though, what about spinning the tires? There's a couple of former champs in Logano and Keselowski. They're looking for a rebound at Phoenix. They're both former Cup Series champions. Team Penske's Joey Logano is 24th in the series point standings. Nobody would have predicted that. Excuse my dog. I don't know what she's barking at. Okay, Sophie.
She's excited about Phoenix, too.
She's excited about Phoenix, too, apparently. Okay, and let's see if I can. Do you want to cover this while I take care of her, Brian?
Yeah, sure. So just kind of picking that back up where Sharon left off there. Both Logano and Keselowski have run very well at Phoenix in the past, and they're looking to kind of rebound and right their seasons, I guess. Logano has 30 starts at Phoenix with 3 wins, 8 top 5, 16 top 10s, and as I mentioned earlier, kind of that odd year or the even year streak of going to victory lane in the even years 3 times in the past here. And Keselowski has a whopping 29 starts at Phoenix with 8 top 5s and 13 top 10s. And I think something to kind of look at with Phoenix, we've had some first-time winners there in the Cup Series, picking up their first ever Cup Series win, and probably the most famous to do that was Alan Kulwicki back in 1988. Not only was that a huge accomplishment for himself and his organization at the time, but it was the first time that Kulwicki introduced us all to that infamous Polish victory lap where he drives the track clockwise or backwards so that he could wave to the fans in his victory lap, and that's something that, you know, has been iconic within NASCAR still to this day. Bobby Hamilton, a name we probably remember from back in the day, also picked up his first win at Phoenix Raceway, and that came while driving for Petty Enterprises back in 1996. It was one of the last few wins that Petty Enterprises has produced. Hamilton won once more for the Petties in 97 at Rockingham, and then John Andretti has brought that organization its final win at Martinsville back in 1999. Petty Enterprises has 268 total wins in the series,
the second most all-time for an organization. And then third and final first-time Cup winner at Phoenix, Stuart Haas Racing's Chase Briscoe. That happened back in 22. That was Briscoe's first Cup win and still his only win to this day. He has six starts at Phoenix with one win, two top fives, and three top tens. So it could be a chance, as I kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, for Briscoe to kind of get things righted for Stuart Haas Racing and kind of continue a little bit of success they've seen with Gregson. Having a good finish last week and trying to see what their 2024 season shapes up to be.
Okay. Now, Brian, did you finish the Logano-Keselowski piece?
Yep.
Okay. So now we'll get into, by the way, in Sophie's defense, I was getting a delivery. And so she heard the guy coming, and you know how dogs are with delivery people.
Hope it was something good.
Okay. Sunoco rookie class update. Now, Hosovar is going to take over the standings lead from Spiral Motorsports. He's leaped, in fact, to that lead for the first time this season. Heading into Phoenix, Hosovar has an 11-point lead over the second Barry and 16 points up on third-place Zane Smith, 18 points up on Kaz Grala. So it's pretty tight when you think about it. So I'm super excited to watch this play out throughout the year because I don't think this is the first time that the leader is going to change throughout the season.
No, most definitely not. Always kind of fun to watch the rookie battle and see which of the younger drivers prevails in that. Heading out west this weekend, there are two drivers that consider Arizona is their home state, and that's another than Alex Bowman and Michael McDowell. 34 different drivers in NASCAR National Series history have recorded their home state as Arizona, but only two of those drivers has won a NASCAR National Series race, and those both happen to be Bowman and McDowell. Obviously, McDowell won the 2021 Daytona 500, and Bowman has 8 wins in the past. When it comes to Phoenix specifically, Bowman has 17 starts there, but only 2 top 10 finishes, so definitely not his best track. And McDowell has 26 starts at Phoenix, the second most of any active driver without a win, behind a driver we just mentioned in Brad Keselowski. McDowell's best finish at his home track is 9th, and that came last November of 2023. So we've got two drivers heading back home this weekend in Bowman and McDowell.
Yeah, it's a shame that neither one of them have won there yet, but I'm hoping that that's going to happen at some point, and it would be cool if it were to happen this year. Okay. A manufacturer that's really off to a great start this season is Chevrolet. We've mentioned it before. They've won the first 3 races of the season and the only manufacturer to be in victory lane so far this year. In the modern era that dates from 72 to the current year, a manufacturer has only swept the season's first 3 races 6 times. Chevrolet drivers are responsible for 5 of those. Chevrolet has done it in 95, 2001, 10, 23, and now in 24. Ford's once to kind of add to the significance of that accomplishment, and that was in 92. So this season, we've mentioned that William Byron won that Daytona 500. Daniel Suarez won that 3-ride race at Atlanta, and Kyle Larson won back-to-back at Las Vegas Motor Speedway last weekend. The manufacturer has swept the first 4 races in the Cup Series season during that modern era time 3 times, Chevrolet in 95 and 2001, Ford in 1992. The record for the most consecutive wins by manufacturer in the start of the Cup season in that modern era period is 9 straight victories. Ford did that back in 1992, which is amazing. So that has never been broken and is a record that still stands today. The most consecutive victories to start the Cup Series by Chevrolet was 7 straight wins. And that was back in the 95 season. That's the second most, as we mentioned, that Ford has the most dating back to 1992. So some cool stats to look at there when it comes to the OEMs.
Yeah, agreed. And a great start for, you know, as you mentioned, Chevrolet to get the season kicked off, not only at the cup level, but has obviously been a very successful Truck Series season, sweeping the first three races there as well, and being in victory lane twice already in the Xfinity Series as well. So really good start to Chevrolet. And kind of looking up, coming to Phoenix, we've got some milestones coming up this week as well as coming up in the next few weeks. And one of those is Joey Logano. He's going to make his 400th start with Team Penske this weekend at Phoenix. It seems like he just made that move to Penske not all that long ago, but he's already had 400 starts with Penske at Phoenix this weekend. And coming up in a few weeks at Richmond Raceway, Logano will make his 550th NASCAR Cup Series start and will be the 39th different driver to reach that milestone of 550 starts. A couple other guys this weekend, Tyler Reddick will make his 150th NASCAR Cup Series start, and then coming up at Circuit of Americas in a few weeks, Bubba Wallace will make his 225th start, and Bell will join Reddick in that 150th club at Circuit of Americas, and Chris Buescher will make his 300th NASCAR Cup Series start at Richmond Raceway. And when it comes to wins, a couple guys that are looking to reach some milestones and wins this year, Jimmy Johnson, obviously running a limited schedule, but if he were to pick up another victory, he will tie NASCAR Hall of Famers Darrell Waltrip and Bobby Allison for fourth on the Cup Series all-time wins list. He's currently tied with Cale Yarborough in sixth. And kind of getting close to that 70-win milestone, Kyle Busch, he would have to win seven races this season. It's possible, but only won a few last year with RCR. He'll become the eighth different driver to accomplish the feat of 70 or more wins. I definitely think he gets that before his career is over. So some rare company there for Kyle Busch. Denny Hamlin, if he wins three races this year, he'll tie NASCAR Hall of Famers Lee Petty for 12th on that list with 54 wins. Brad Keselowski, if he were to get two wins this year, he would tie Bobby Isaac for 23rd on the list. Truex was looking to tie Brad Keselowski for 24th on that list. He'll do that with his next win, which would be his 35th. And Kyle Larson needs one more win to reach that 25 career wins milestone. He'd be the 36th different driver to reach that milestone. And when it comes to laps led, three drivers are looking to reach another milestone in laps led. Erik Jones, next milestone for him would be 1,000. He needs to lead another 173 laps. Larson has led 7,761 laps in his career, needs 239 more for that 8,000 milestone. And Ryan Blaney has led 3,746 laps. He needs 254 more laps, 1,000 laps.
Okay. Well, talking about Phoenix Raceway's Midway, there's a new feature there this year that a lot of fans are going to want to check out. It's called the Viva La Fiesta set. So it's the newest attraction at Phoenix, located near Gate 5. It has a Hispanic theme exhibition and is on full display throughout the Shriners Children's 500 weekend, March 8th through the 10th. It's free to all ticket holders, so definitely check that out if you're going to be at the track. Through a partnership with Mexican beer brand Estrella de Jalisco, fans can experience a variety of fun activities and displays throughout the weekend. The main stage is going to feature a musical and dance performances from acts such as DJ Jay Medina, Maharaki Ala de Arizona, Ballet for Folk Lorico, Esperanza, and much more. In addition, there's going to be Q&A sessions with Mexican-born NASCAR Cup Series driver and recent winner of the Ann Better Health 400 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. That's Daniel Suarez, along with players from the Phoenix Rising FC. Fans can also get their picture taken with the trophy with Suarez, the trophy that Suarez won, the King Taco La Batalla in El Jalisco, I can't pronounce it, the historic NASCAR Mexico Series race that took place on February 3rd at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. So that's going to be pretty cool to be able to do. There is also going to be Lucha Libre Racing, or wrestling, I mean, at the Viva La Fiesta Zone, with matches taking place from 1:30 to 2 p.m. on Saturday, March the 9th, and 9 to 9:30 a.m., and 10:30 to 11 a.m. on Sunday, March the 10th. Fans can find sophisticated fuel riders, local food and drink trucks, and many more things to do at that Viva La Fiesta throughout the entire race weekend. So that's going to be super fun for fans this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's always great to see some different and interesting midway activities. I think we talked about this before, but I feel like for several years there, even leading up to COVID and then even in post-COVID times, just not as much to do from a fan perspective. A lot of reasons kind of driving that, but I think we're starting to see some of that come back, some more midway activities. They've had some more drivers coming out for autograph sessions on the last couple weeks in the midway, so I think that's good to see some more opportunities for fans to want to get there early and experience more than just the race itself. So always great to see, and hopefully that's a trend that will continue to kind of bring that back. I think, you know, Sharon, we've both been Chicagoland Speedway as fans, and I think there used to be so much there back in the day, and it really kind of dwindled. Mm-hmm. So really looking forward to kind of seeing more activities like that, because it really makes it a true event.
Well, I think we've talked about this before, too. I know my brother and I are looking to get out to Phoenix Raceway maybe in 2025. I think you told me you've never been to that racetrack either. That'll be a first for us.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. And I actually have some friends that live out in that area. So definitely, I might try to make it for the November race, actually, but I'd love to go next spring in March and kind of coincide that with some spring training baseball games as well. See my Cubs in action out there, as well as taking the NASCAR weekend. So it's kind of already on a 2025 travel list going as well, even though we're barely to 24. So that is on there. So hopefully we can make that happen.
Okay. And I'm going to take these next few minutes to put some praise on you, Brian, because you've been a member of our Fan for Racing crew off and on throughout the years here. And I really want to thank you for taking this spot for the first 12 weeks of our season, as Jay's unable to be here for those first 12 events. And you've been really good about filling in and doing a great job. So thank you so much for doing that.
Thanks. I greatly appreciate that. Yeah, it's always been fun. I've always enjoyed being part of the Hot Topics if and when I can, and I'm glad it kind of works out with my day job schedule. Even last season and into this season, to make that happen a little bit more, joys of the remote world and kind of being able to manage my schedule a little bit better. So I think that's been awesome and fun. And yeah, it's really been kind of crazy that, you know, thinking about this the other day, actually, I think it's been 11 years now since I covered my first ever race. And that was in 2013 at the Milwaukee Mile. Actually, it was an IndyCar race for the first time. And I still have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just faking it. But I just felt like I definitely had no idea back then, covered that, and have had the opportunity to cover a lot of different races and beat a lot of different tracks and taken some cool experiences, write some stories, and be part of this show. It's always been fun and always entertaining and always a great time and something I look forward to just sit around and talk motorsports. So always grateful to have me on, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I've got some ideas rolling around in my head for what we might do different for this season. And I'm just going to say I don't have all my I's dotted or T's crossed yet, but watch for, I'm hoping, an announcement to come from Fan for Racing in the coming weeks with regard to a new show that I'd like to feature. And, Brian, I'm going to probably give you a call and talk to you privately about that as well. I'm really excited about it, and we'll kind of keep you posted as we progress along with making plans for that to happen. So right now we are at the top of the hour, and it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion with the Fan for Racing crew, and that's going to be the trio of us here today, myself, Brian, and joining us now is Mike Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Well, good afternoon. Glad to be a part of the discussion.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you kind of kick us off with the first hot topic here today, Mike.
All right. Well, Adam Stern reported that NASCAR is exploring the possibility of doing a race at the Dodgers Stadium. That would be in Los Angeles as well. We know that they've done the Clash at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum for the past 3 years, and there's been some discussion about potentially moving the event away from there and what NASCAR's options in the Southern California market are. Obviously, there's no racetrack available there with Fontana being closed for demolition and potential reconstruction, but NASCAR is potentially exploring doing a race at the Dodgers Stadium. Kind of an interesting thing for sure.
Okay. What are your thoughts about that, Brian?
I love the idea. I mean, it sounds kind of like something almost that you'd see in a video game more than real life, but I think that's what we thought when the Coliseum first came up. And honestly, I hated that idea and thought it was dumb, honestly, and it's actually worked out, you know, fairly well, I think, as far as the racing goes, just something different and unique on the schedule. You know, I'm curious to see even how a track would fit inside Dodger Stadium, but me, obviously, as a numbers guy, I'm sitting here thinking, it's got to be so damn expensive. Is that worth it? But obviously, they think it is if they're looking at it, but, you know, obviously, we'll never have access to all that behind-the-scenes detail and information, but I'd love to just see kind of the cost of that and the time spent to build a track in a place like that. Definitely think it would be cool maybe get, you know, people that are baseball fans wanting to come out to Dodger Stadium and watch a NASCAR race. It's crazy to think about. Obviously, personally, let's put a track inside Wrigley Field and race there. I mean, they used to race inside Soldier Field back in the day. So, but, yeah. Cool to see. They're obviously exploring some different things. We hear a lot about what may happen next year with potentially going to Mexico or to Canada with a race as well. You know, I don't know. I think it's an interesting concept. I don't know where it will go, but at this point, I would say no to anything. I think, I wouldn't say no to anything. I think experiment and see what happens. I think obviously putting dirt on Bristol, I didn't like, and that didn't quite work out, but I feel like the Coliseum has maybe worked out better than we thought, although it just hasn't quite drawn, I don't think, the fans in person that maybe they thought or would have expected. That's where I kind of struggle, at least from the number standpoint of, like, how can that be profitable? How can that be beneficial? So that's kind of my two cents.
Well, I agree with you, Brian. I think I've had some of those same thoughts crossing my mind and concerns, but I think back to the Chicago street race, and I had some concerns about whether or not that was going to work. So I've learned not to underestimate what NASCAR can accomplish. And I know that California market, that West Coast market, is a huge market potential for NASCAR. And I know that they're looking for ways to attract new fans. So this is, I think, part of their strategy for doing that. And I doubted the Coliseum. I doubted the street race. Both of those turned out to be fantastic. So I'm not going to doubt this. I'm going to trust that NASCAR knows what they're doing, and they're going to make it work. And for the reasons that I just outlined, they're looking for new viewers. They're looking for something unique. They're looking for to grow that California market. So I think there is a huge following for NASCAR out there, but they yearn for more NASCAR events. So I think that is why NASCAR is not abandoning that market. We lost Fontana for a few years. Auto Club Speedway for a few years as they kind of reconfigure that to a short track. So they're looking for some unique and entertaining ways, I guess, to make that happen. And this is just another step in that direction. So I applaud NASCAR for thinking outside of the box. I think back also to years ago, this is really not a new idea. Years ago, and you'll back me up on this, Brian, drivers were racing around a short track at Soldier's Field. So they've done this before. Maybe not NASCAR. I think it was NASCAR, but I do think that this is a really great way to attract new people into the sport, as well as make it entertaining for the existing fans. So we'll see how it plays out. Mike, I'm really curious to know what your thoughts.
I'm with you. I do like that they're thinking outside the box here. And speaking of outside of things, we hear Dodger Stadium, and we assume that they're talking about putting a track on the inside of the field, kind of like they do with the Los Angeles Coliseum. However, there's really nothing that says they have to do that. If you look at the satellite map of the Coliseum, they're really limited. There's really nothing around there that they could expand into, so they have to be inside the stadium there because there's really nowhere else to go. However, if you look at Dodger Stadium, there's a lot more open space around there. There's quite a few large parking lots, and the roads around there as well are a lot less densely populated than the area around the Los Angeles Coliseum. So just because they're having a race on the Dodger Stadium property doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to need to be inside the stadium as well. Keep in mind, Formula One did a race in Miami around the Hard Rock Stadium. They didn't even go inside the stadium. They used the parking lots and streets around the facility to set up a course around there that doesn't actually use the inside of the stadium as well. So that could be a potential option if NASCAR is to move to the other side of Los Angeles, up to the Dodger Stadium. They could potentially set up something other than a very small oval inside the stadium and run either a street course or a hybrid street road course, something along those lines, kind of like what Formula One did in Miami. Obviously, this is just kind of a tentative, talking about it, thinking about it kind of a thing, and I really don't know anything more about the idea beyond what Adam Stern posted, which was just that NASCAR is looking at the Dodger Stadium property. The Coliseum, we've done 3 years there, and it's been fun. It's been entertaining, but the excitement for it and the novelty of it is definitely seeming to wear thin. This year's event was very poorly attended. Now, then again, they did end up rescheduling the show all to be on Saturday evening versus the two-day show that they were originally planning with heat races and whatnot on Saturday and the main event on Sunday, and they did it very short notice. So you can't really hold the attendance, the poor attendance this year at the Clash exclusively on the Los Angeles fans for not showing up, because there were some circumstances there that led to making it difficult for those people to drop everything on a Saturday and head to the race that was originally supposed to be on a Sunday. So you can't really hold that against the Los Angeles fans. But even then, it looks like the attendance year over year from year one to two to three has declined. And year one to two, the decline can't be pinned on the weather at all, because the weather was good that second year that they ran the Clash, and they had a lot fewer people show up for that as well. Whether that means the Los Angeles market as a whole isn't particularly excited about racing in their city, it's tough to say. I don't have any of the numbers as far as what their ratings are, but I do know that they never show up in the top 10 when people like Adam Stern post up the ratings for the markets that are most popular with NASCAR. I don't know that I've ever seen any of the Southern California markets, Los Angeles, San Diego, anything like that, on any of those top 10 lists as far as the big markets for NASCAR. I don't know if it's a matter of if you build it, they will come. I don't know if they will come or not, but I don't think NASCAR wants to give up the Southern California market. They don't have a dedicated track right now, so they're having to come up with other solutions. And the Coliseum, that experiment may be over. It might be like the Bristol Dirt Race that Brian alluded to, where they tried something. It kind of sort of worked, but it ran its course, and now we're back to racing on the concrete in Bristol here in a few weeks. So what that means as far as what NASCAR is going to continue to do in Southern California, I'm not sure, but I do find it pretty intriguing. And I think the Dodger Stadium idea does open up the door to a lot more possibilities than what the Coliseum did. What that ends up looking like in terms of what a potential track would be, we're just going to have to wait and see. But I do think it's pretty interesting that NASCAR is continuing to branch out and try new things that probably, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, they would never even have considered doing anything like that. So it is interesting to see that they're really branching out and opening the door to some new stuff that really is outside of the scope of quote-unquote traditional NASCAR.
Okay, Brian, your follow-up.
Yeah, that's actually a great point Mike made there. It's maybe not limited to just putting a track inside Dodger Stadium, but running something kind of out and around the parking lot, similar to what F1 did down in Miami.
I really do kind of like that idea. Like I said, this is an exhibition event, right? If we're talking about like something to replace the Clash, we're not talking about a regular season race. We're talking about something that's supposed to, you know, draw some interest, be different, be exciting, get people interested, things like that. So I love the fact that they're continuing to innovate. But to Mike's point, you know, 5-10 years ago, probably wouldn't have ever seen any ideas like this being considered. I think we live in a day and age where you've got to have kind of the next big thing or the next excitement, you know, things to just do differently. And I think that could definitely go in that direction and help that. So I'm excited to see, you know, where it goes. Obviously just an idea at this point, but I do think, you know, the Clash at the Coliseum maybe has kind of run its course and it's time to do something different. So excited to see where that may go.
Absolutely. And I agree. That was a good point. The idea of being on the outside versus the inside. I think that there's things that go along with that, like where's the seating going to be? But I think it's an interesting idea. And I think it should be noted that it's just one of the options that are being evaluated in Southern California. I think that they're looking at other options as well. So it could be any number of things that they come up with, but Dodger Stadium, I would think, would be one that could be viable. I think that NASCAR, really, when you think about it, they are leading the way. I don't know of any other sport that has been this creative or this out of the box in their thinking about a situation that they have to deal with. But we mentioned that Auto Club Speedway is under construction right now, so it's not available. So they have to look at these other options, like Brian and Mike both said. And I don't know about any other sport that has been this creative in doing that. I think the street races were very creative for NASCAR as well. And I had my doubts about how that was going to work. And I think a lot of people have their doubts about how that was going to work. But NASCAR made it happen, and they're about to do it again. I think we're going to see the same thing happen with the street race at Chicago that we saw happening with the Coliseum. I think that the three-year window is about the max window that we can see for some of these kind of things. These are very expensive propositions for NASCAR. But if they can make them work, then kudos to them for coming up with these ideas. I would like to see the stats on if they're making money by doing these creative things and if it's really working for them. Obviously, it's the best they can do under the circumstances that they have in some of these situations. And I think that NASCAR is exploring other options for Chicago for a street race. I think they're looking at other venues that they could go to for a street race. So I think they recognize that three-year window is probably the max that they can do for any of these types of out-of-the-box ideas that they've come up with. So we'll see how it plays out. I can't wait to see what they end up doing for next year out in that California market and for the Chicago street race, for that matter, as well, when they hit their three-year mark as well. So, Mike, you get to wrap this one up. Your thoughts?
Well, we're making more assumptions here. We're talking about it being in the Los Angeles market as a replacement for the Coliseum, but there's really nothing that says it has to be an exhibition race. It doesn't have to be a limited field like the Clash. If they do a course on the outside of Dodger Stadium as opposed to inside of it, that really opens up some possibilities for what they could do. The Clash was never really viable as a points race because it's pretty much impossible to fit a full 36 to 40 car field on that little quarter-mile racetrack inside the Los Angeles Coliseum. It just logistically, physically, it would not work, and it wouldn't be really fair to the competitors to try and make a points race out of that Coliseum. However, if you were to make a larger course outside of Dodger Stadium on the streets and parks around there, and you could fit a full 40-car field onto whatever they constructed out there, I don't see why they couldn't make a points race out of it. We're talking about trying to raise the prominence of the Los Angeles market, and having the Clash there was nice, but there's always the perception that it's just, quote-unquote, just an exhibition race. It doesn't really matter. It's not a big deal, et cetera. And having a more important race there by being a points race, I think that raises the stakes of it a little bit more and may draw more interest from fans. you talked about the Chicago street race as well as having that 3-year window of that, you know, the excitement and enthusiasm. A lot of it may be tied to the novelty of it being new and different. And as that new and different novelty wears off, you're right, Sharon. I think the excitement and interest in it may fade with it as well. The upshot of the Chicago market is unlike Los Angeles, where there's really no other option anywhere near there, they do have another option in the Chicago market. Chicagoland Speedway is still there, and I'm sure, Sharon, you would love to see that place come back. And it's not that far away. It's not downtown Chicago. It's about an hour drive away over in Joliet. But at least it's still in the Chicago market, whereas Los Angeles really has nothing anywhere near there. So they're confined to using existing facilities and trying to make something work. Now, if the Chicago street race goes away, if they're able to negotiate a street race in Los Angeles, whether it be at Dodger Stadium or somewhere else in the city, that may be a good replacement for the Chicago street race if that event does end up going away after the 3-year contract period expires. Looking into the Los Angeles market, even if Fontana Auto Club Speedway, even if they do continue to pursue the short track project there, which they've got the demolition more or less done, as far as construction of that short track, I've heard some varying opinions of whether or not that's actually going to happen and whether or not it would even work with the amount of property that NASCAR retained in the area. They may not be able to have a full-time race in the Los Angeles area anytime soon because there just won't be a dedicated racing facility there. So having those other options, be it a street race or a parking lot race, whatever you want to call it, around Dodger Stadium, that may keep that door to the Los Angeles market open. And if they're able to pull off a points race there, I think that helps raise I guess you could use the word prestige of NASCAR's presence in Southern California. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Obviously, nothing's been announced yet. It's all one report and a lot of speculation surrounding it. So we're just going to have to wait and pay attention. We're still probably several months off. Usually the schedule for the upcoming year doesn't get released until fall. So we're probably looking at September-ish, maybe October, before we see any concrete details with regard to what may be new and coming up in the 2025 season. But having an event in the Los Angeles area, whether it be at the Coliseum or Dodger Stadium or somewhere else within the area, I don't think NASCAR wants to give up that market. So I'd expect to see Los Angeles on the schedule in some capacity. We just don't know what it's going to be quite yet. We're going to have to wait and see.
Absolutely, and you're right. I think Brian would agree that we want the Chicagoland Speedway to be back on the schedule. I think we saw some of the best racing at Chicagoland Speedway in four series, with the ARCA Series racing there, as well as the Trucks, the Xfinity, and the Cup Series. All of those series put on some fantastic racing at that track. So would you agree, Brian?
Paul, you know it. Biased, obviously, but definitely my favorite track. Obviously, for a while, didn't maybe produce the best racing, but it was producing some great racing there towards the end, and it got, you know, worn out and bumpier. And, I think quickly became everyone's favorite mile-and-a-half track before it fell off the schedule. So, obviously, it's still sitting there. I drive by it every so often when I'm in the area, and could fire it up and race again at any point in time, hopefully. So maybe that'll come back someday. I definitely hold out hope that it does as they continue to look for new and different ways to kind of, shake up the schedule, but at the same time, you know, make things still financially viable for everyone.
All right. Let's talk about Brian picking our next hot topic.
Yeah, and I think we'll kind of stick on that financial viability. And Mike posed this topic in our group. But Joey Logano has a weekly segment on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, and this weekend he was kind of discussing the broken financial model of the lower series, basically kind of pointing out that, you know, he's a two-time Cup Series champion, and even if he wants to go run an Xfinity or truck race, he's expecting to pay and bring money to the table for those Xfinity or trucks, where you would obviously think a guy of his talent should be able to, you know, get himself in a ride and, you know, the exposure and higher likelihood of winning the race and making more money from that race purse would be enough for a team to want to put him into a vehicle, right? You think back in the day when we had all the Cup guys running, up 20-some Cup guys down there running in a Busch Series race back in the day. But to Logano's point, how realistic is it that a kid that, you know, an upcoming driver that has no money but experience and no money and looking to get that experience and has a lot of talent at these, you know, grassroots levels, how is he supposed to make it when he can't, you know, cut a huge check
and bring a ton of money to the table. So I thought that was some interesting comments from Logano, and I think a great topic kind of to cover and get your and Mike's thoughts on.
Okay, Mike.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Joey more. And I would say even Tommy might even want to agree with him and probably bite his lip while he's doing it. But at the same time, you can't argue with him. Logano is absolutely right. There's something really fundamentally broken in the way our sport works as far as the financial of it are concerned. He talks about just a truck series entry. If you want to go, if you want to buy your way into a truck series ride, he threw out the number $100,000 if you want to buy your way into a competitive truck series ride. That's a significant amount of money. Even for a sponsored guy, that's a pretty huge amount of money. Asking a sponsor to cough up six figures just to run for a truck series ride, that's a big ask for a lot of people. And now when you're talking about somebody who wants to be in the entry level, who doesn't really have the a deep connection, you know, a family business that they can tap into or some of the big ties to, some seriously deep pockets, we could have some very talented drivers who could potentially be future Cup Series champions who would never get the opportunity simply because they don't have the financial backing. It's really frustrating as a race fan knowing that, and we see the results in basically every series that isn't the NASCAR Cup Series these days. The majority of drivers, the successful drivers from ARCA, trucks, and the Xfinity Series, they're all paying their way in, whether they're coming in with big personal sponsorship deals or they have some sort of deep family pocket, something along those lines. Almost all of the drivers in those series are buying their way in, and they're the ones bringing the money to the table. They're not getting picked up by team owners who are going out hiring those drivers based on what they see and what they like. These drivers are primarily in their rides because of the money that they bring to the table. And that's not necessarily to take anything away from them. However, the reality is what it is. It's unfortunate because, like I said, you have drivers who potentially could have the skill and talent to develop into becoming a Cup Series champion who just never get the opportunity simply because they don't have those financial connections. I don't know what the solution is. I know there's the big negotiation right now between the team owners and NASCAR with regard to revenue sharing and the distribution of TV rights and whatnot, but that's mostly focused on the Cup Series. I don't know that there's any sort of similar arrangement that could be made in the lower tier series, ARCA through the Xfinity Series and trucks, because there's not a charter system in there. There's not as much revenue to divvy up and spread around. So what the solution looks like, I don't know. Unless there's some sort of massive influx of cash of sponsorship directly to the teams, which has not been forthcoming over the past few years, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to make a whole lot of headway there. But Logano brings up the point. If when you're a two-time Cup Series champion, double-digit race winner like Joey Logano, you would figure that that kind of a resume would get team owners to want to put a guy like that in their car, if for no other reason than to have the opportunity to have their car up front, get the recognition, get the notoriety, et cetera. But according to Logano, that's not the case. So even a very talented, established, well-known, and well-liked by people not named Tommy Kraft driver, kind of like Joey Logano, if he can't get a shot, who can? And that's unfortunate. So you see guys like Kyle Busch or the Hendrick Motorsports drivers in the HMS car running in the lower tier series. But other than that, just jumping in and randomly driving a Xfinity Series or Truck Series ride is really not within reach for even Cup Series drivers because they don't want to reach into their pocket and spend six figures just to go out and take some kids' lunch money in the lower series. What's the solution? I don't know that there is one, but I would be interested to see if they could come up with one.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. I think that this Joey Logano brings up a really, really good point, whether you like him or not. His point is valid. And I was trying to think to myself, why would NASCAR do that? And I think that has to be part of the conversation. And since NASCAR's not telling us why they would do that, it leaves us to speculate. So there's two things that crossed my mind as speculation to that. One is that sponsors are paying less and less money into the sport. The drivers have to get multiple sponsors in order to be able to stay in NASCAR, and it doesn't matter which series they're in. They usually have multiple sponsors. The other part of that is then when you think about the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, they don't fill up the track. There's fans in the stands, don't get me wrong. It's just not to the same degree as the fans that they get into the stands for the Cup Series. And when you look at the purse that these teams are getting, it's not as big as you might think that they would be for those two series. And so that money has to come from somewhere. So I think what NASCAR's option has been is that if these upper tier guys that are making some big money want to race in these lower tier series, they're going to have to pay. But he's right. It's not just the big name stars that are making big money that have to pay. It's anybody who wants to race in that race. They have to pay money. And that happens at short tracks too, by the way. At the short tracks, drivers have to pay to get into the race, even at the short tracks and your local home tracks, because they're not making big money at those tracks. And so they have to build a purse one way or another. And I think that's how NASCAR is doing it in these particular cases. If they're not filling the stands, if they're not getting the money from the sponsors, that money has to come from somewhere. And so I understand NASCAR's dilemma on this as well, if that is the case. And I apologize for my phone, so I'll go ahead and put myself on mute and let you follow up, Brian, and I'll finish mine on the next go-around.
Yeah, I mean, I think really kind of a way to look at this from a financial standpoint, I kind of look at these numbers every week, but they release what the purses are for the three different national series. So, for instance, this weekend at Phoenix, Cup Series, $7.8 million is the purse. Xfinity Series, $1.45 million. And the Truck Series purse is only $761,274. That's, I mean, you know, to Logano's point, you could go out and win one of these races and the team still loses money without sponsorship money coming in the door and these, you know, checks from drivers and their family. So just, I don't know what the answer is to fix it. Again, like, just, it's crazy that it's gotten so broken over the years, and I don't know how you get it back to what it was. Maybe you never get it back to what it was, but it just feels like something has got to change. When you look at, you know, especially Cup drivers, like you had Kevin Harvick used to have a Truck Series team. Brad Keselowski used to have a Truck Series team. Kyle Busch used to have a Truck Series team. All three of those drivers, very successful at the Cup level, seem like they're, you know, obviously know the sport front and back, and it did all they could to try to run successful teams, and they weren't able to keep that going. To me, that's a big problem, right? When you can't have a driver like that that's had a very successful career go down and make it somehow work to invest in those lower series and keep it going. I mean, I think, I don't remember if it was Keselowski or Harvick or somebody said they were losing over $1 million a year running their Truck Series operation. That's crazy. And somehow they've got to find ways to fix it and make it different. I don't know what that answer is. So, but yeah, I would love to see something happen, and I just wish I could figure out what that is.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up?
I think we're all kind of on the same page. We all know there's a problem. I don't think anyone's saying that there's not a problem, but the bigger issue is, well, what do you do to fix it? And Sharon, you brought up about, oh, how does NASCAR let this happen? Well, NASCAR really doesn't have a hand in it, at least not directly. They're not obligating these teams to spend as much money as they do. They're not making the races cost as much as they do to participate in. I'm sure there's entry fees and licensing and all that stuff, but I doubt that that's a significant portion of what the team's budget really is. For NASCAR to address this, if they want to get involved there, I think what they need to do is attack it from the spending end. They need to identify what is costing so much money. Why are these things so expensive for teams to put a car together or multiple cars together? And why is it so expensive for them to participate in these races? And if they are able to identify a couple key points, whatever those may be, whether it's construction costs or transportation or research development, something along those lines, if they're able to find a couple big tent poles there that are really driving costs, maybe attack it from that angle to figure out how to drive the costs down. Spending $1 million a year to run a Truck Series race that just a purse, a total purse, and when Brian says purse, of $700,000, that's not the money to win the race. That's the total amount of money they're paying out to everybody from first to last place. That gets divided up based on your finishing position, and that's what the total purse is. So a purse of $700,000, if you win the race, I'd be surprised if you get maybe a quarter of that, probably less than that, because the rest of that goes to the rest of the field. So having a purse that just doesn't even pay the bills to show up to the racetrack, it really makes you wonder of what's the incentive to come out there. Remember Greg Van Alst last year, he went out and won the ARCA Series race at Daytona, probably the biggest race that ARCA has every year. He went out and put an entry together and won the race at Daytona last year, and he very publicly said he spent far, far more money preparing the race car and getting it to the racetrack and competing in the race. He spent way more money doing that than he actually won by winning the biggest ARCA race of the year. And that's, like I said, the big race. It probably doesn't cost substantially less to race at a smaller ARCA race like Phoenix this weekend. I don't know that it'd be substantially cheaper for somebody to put a car together and run at Phoenix versus running at Daytona. So the model there is just it's broken. And aside from just having a massive influx of cash, which all indications are pointing to that not coming, I don't know what the actual solution is going to be. I think the most important part is going to be to get that spending under control, figure out what the costs are, and figure out effective ways to mitigate it. They tried to do it in the Cup Series with the Gen 7 car, and that kind of backfired. There's been a lot of teams that say the Gen 7 car has been more expensive for them because of the single-source part suppliers and the expenses with that versus building in-house. The Gen 7 car has actually been more expensive for these Cup Series teams to run than the Gen 6 car. So I don't know that it going to a spec car in the Xfinity Series or the Truck Series would be particularly beneficial, but finding something or a collection of some things that are costing teams a disproportionate amount of money and working to attack from that angle, I think may be the best solution that is within NASCAR's control that they can implement without relying on outside revenue streams from sponsorship, TV deals, or wherever else they may get funding from, because I think they're already pretty well maxed out there. So getting more money out of that piggy bank is probably not a viable option.
All right. I agree with a lot of what you said there, but I'm not sure I said that how did NASCAR get there point, but maybe I did and I meant something different. I'm not sure. But anyway, I do think that NASCAR needs to go back and look at what worked for them in the past. I think it's a combination of what you said, Mike. They've got to look at how they can cut the expenses, and I think they've been trying to do that to some extent. But at the same time, they've got to look at how can they attract more people into those stands, because that's where the purse money is supposed to be coming from, is from the people that are sitting in the stands watching those events. And they've lost people who are willing to shell out the money for those tickets to be in the stand. And one of the things that I think plays into that is something that Kyle Busch has brought up many, many times. Some of his sponsorship money comes from the idea of him running in multiple events to include the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series races. The drivers love it when these guys come into those series and race in those series, because they learn so much from the Cup Series drivers when they are racing those events. Yes, to some degree it does take away, and I know NASCAR had to look at a balance there because if they win the race, that takes away earnings from the regular drivers that are in those events. But they also bring people to the track. If you're a fan of Kyle Busch, you're going to pay to see him race in all three races. If you're a fan of Joey Logano, you're going to pay to see Joey Logano race in those events. NASCAR has limited those guys to five races in the Xfinity and the Truck Series if they want to run in those events. That means that they're limiting their income, and for Kyle Busch, some of his sponsorship money as well. So if it's not going to be that, how are they going to attract more fans to come to those events? I know they tried to, in some events, they allow the kids to come to the race for free. But I think they have to be more creative than that. They've got to look at the entertainment. But all of that costs money. So it's kind of a chasing your tail proposition. But there has to be some way that they can attract more people to come to the track and to be in the seats and watch these races. I think that's part of the problem. They're losing viewership of fans wanting to be at the track for those events. It used to be that fans would pay for the weekend to be at the track in order to see all of the events that were taking place at the track. And a lot of that has been pulled back on. There's not as many things post-COVID that are happening at the track for fans to want to invest that kind of money. So how do you offset that? And I think part of what NASCAR needs to be looking at, in addition to what Mike's saying, how do you reduce the cost for doing business? But I think there's the other side of that coin as well. I think there's things that they can be doing to generate money as well. I think fans are willing to spend the money if they're getting the big bang for their buck. So I'm glad I'm not in NASCAR's shoes and have to figure all of that out, because it's not an, it's a very complex thing that they have to look at. But I think that it all plays together. So, Brian, what are your final thoughts on this subject?
I mean, I think you guys made a lot of great points as we went around there a couple of times. But, I think, too, when you look at it, I always think, like, oh, we need to make the truck series, you know, more standalone races, more, you know, some of these tracks I used to go to back in the day when it first started, you know, even now, like, to go, like, the Milwaukee Mile, it's one of their few standalone races they even have on the schedule anymore. But then at the same time, are those financially viable, right? When you don't have all the infrastructure and stuff that comes with Cup, you're having to go do that at another track. You know, is that just making them lose money? Maybe that's not the right answer. But I feel like the truck series especially has kind of lost its identity of that place where you had, you know, some grizzled veterans and just a really good mix of drivers and just, you know, some really badass short tracks. And I'd love to see that kind of go back to that identity. But what I struggle with is that financially, you know, viable for them running the 23-race schedule at, you know, 10 standalone races instead of, you know, just a couple that are left on the schedule these days. So I think it's something I'd love to learn more about. Obviously, they're not going to share the inside the financials with anybody and everybody, but I just think that, you know, that's something that could be looked at of kind of giving that a little bit more of its identity, just some more standalone stuff, maybe some more combo Xfinity truck stuff away from Cup. I don't know, though. I struggle with that being financially viable, and then it's probably not the solution, but maybe a step that could be taken or could be tried.
All right. Mike, you get to bring up our next hot topic here.
All right. Well, speaking of drivers getting a shot, Isabella Robusto is going to be getting her first opportunity in the ARCA Menards Series coming up this weekend at Phoenix. She was supposed to run several ARCA races last year. However, she got a concussion at Hickory last April, and she ended up missing the majority of 2023, not just in ARCA, but off the track entirely because of that injury. If you don't know who Isabella Robusto is, she's a late model driver who has been featured in several Toyota commercials. So even if you don't know who she is by name, chances are you've seen her face in a lot of the Toyota commercials that ran during NASCAR races last year. So she's going to be getting her first opportunity in the ARCA Menards Series this weekend at Phoenix, with several more races to follow later on in the year.
Okay, Brian, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's great. We kind of touched on that a little bit in the preview show, and prior to that, I hadn't really heard much about her story or known much about it. So I think great to be back and to get a chance to, you know, show what she can do. Like she said, she's been kind of featured in Toyota commercials, got that Toyota support behind her, which I think is, you know, key from that standpoint, obviously, with the financial and the sponsorship backing. And I think we're all just kind of looking to see who that next, you know, big female name could be to kind of make their ways up through the ranks. You know, since the days of Danica Patrick, we haven't really seen anyone that's been able to stick around and at those higher levels and really be successful. So could it be her? Who knows? We'll look to see, but she's getting her start with ARCA this weekend.
Yeah, we've actually had Isabella Robusto on our Fan for Racing radio show. She is a Rev Racing driver and part of that Drive for Diversity program. And she really had a little bit of a hiccup, if you will, last year with that concussion taking her out of racing. So it's good to see her coming back. She has been making waves in the late model racing at the short tracks and in the weekly auto parts weekly series. So I'm anxious to see how she does in the ARCA Menards series and with this race at Phoenix Raceway this weekend. As you guys have pointed out, she was supposed to do that last year with Venturini Motorsports, and they had to postpone it because of her medical issues that were going on. So I think we're going to have fun seeing Isabella Robusto on the track and seeing what she's able to do. She was going to make her first start in the East Series race at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway in May, but as we mentioned, that didn't happen. But I don't think this is the last race that we're going to see her in either. I think she is going to continue to race throughout the season. I'm trying to see if it's a limited schedule this season or if she's going to race for the whole season, and I haven't quite seen that information yet. And I'm trying to get her car number here as well. Give me just a second. Isabella Root. Okay, she is going to be racing with Venturini Motorsports. She'll be behind the wheel of the number 55 for this season, this weekend, and Kevin Reed Jr. is going to be her crew chief. So I think she's going to be in good equipment. I think we're going to see good things from her, and I can't wait to see what happens at Phoenix this weekend. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, real excited to see a driver like this get the opportunity. Not to take away from any of the other drivers we've had, female drivers we've had come in, Natalie Decker, Tony Breidinger, and Haley Deegan, but I almost get more like an organic feel from Isabella Robusto. And it's hard to describe, but it, you know, she feels like more of a traditional racer as opposed to somebody who's getting plugged into a ride because of who they are, which is what I'm really hoping for. I'm hoping for the day, one day, when we get to the point where a driver's demographic information, be whether they're a female or from a minority group or whatever, I'm hoping we get to the point where that doesn't matter because they're just another racer. And the way that we get there is for them to go out, be successful on the racetrack, and they're able to promote themselves via the results on the racetrack as opposed to their demographic qualities. So, like I said, nothing to take away from any of the other drivers who've come up through the sport, but I think Isabella's experience in late models, I think she's going to bring more racecraft and experience to the ARCA Menards series than maybe we've seen from some of the other drivers who've gotten plugged into that series over the past few years. I think her experience and maturity that she has in the late model world, I think will translate very well. And I'm not saying she's going to go out there and win this weekend. It's very difficult to just jump in a car and be dominant right out of the gate, having never driven in that series before. But I think once she gets some seat time and a little bit of experience, I think that there's no reason to think that she can't develop into a very capable driver who would have success at the ARCA level and potentially beyond that if things work out for her.
Yeah. Brian, your follow-up.
I second kind of what Mike said. I think it does kind of have that natural kind of a little bit more organic feel, if you will, for maybe it's not the best way to describe it, but I totally get what I'm trying to say. I think just the fact that she's kind of come up a little bit more organically, and I think just looking to see someone have some success out there with it. So I hope she has a great debut, and looking forward to watching her the rest of the season and see how she progresses. Like I said, probably not going to go out and win the first weekend out there at Phoenix, but definitely hopefully a strong performance. Definitely going to be a great field with, 40 plus cars slated to take on qualifying there at Phoenix. So great ARCA field, and should be a great event coming up on Friday night on FS1.
Yeah, no doubt. Isabella Robusto has been a star in the short track world. In fact, she raced at the World Series of Asphalt Stock Car Racing at New Smyrna Speedway earlier this year in the pro late model class. And she had four top fives and fourth place points finish for overall for the weekend. So I think that speaks volumes. She also says that she's almost glad that that there was a lull, if you will. I'm trying to think of another word there. But she said she thinks she's stronger both physically and mentally than before her crash. She made it through the 7 races at Speed Weeks at New Smyrna. She had no problems there. She really did well throughout the weekend, and she's definitely ready to start with ARCA after nearly a year of being off. The one thing that's going to be different for Robusto this weekend, this is the biggest track that she's ever raced at Phoenix. She's going to have a lot of cars on the track. There's 42 competitors on that track this weekend in the ARCA race. So she's going to have a lot of, and I think there's some, we covered it earlier, there's some big names in that race as well at Phoenix. I'm going to kind of go over those as well. So she's going to have some tough competition, but I don't think that's going to slow her down. I think we said there's 4 females that are going to be in the race. Amber Balkin's going to be there. Tony Breidinger is going to be in that race. And there's another one. I'm trying to find the name. I'm missing. Oh, Danica Dart. She is from Washington State. She's going to be racing this weekend as well. But she, some other drivers that are coming in for this race, at Marco Andretti is going to be in the race. Grant Infinger is going to be in this race. Greg Van Alst. Who are some of the other names? I guess those are the ones that stand out to me. I thought we had some other bigger names in there, but it's going to be interesting to see what she does. In addition to, you know, the names that I already mentioned, there's the already people that have made a name in the ARCA Menards series, William Sawalich being one of those, and Christian Rose is an up-and-coming driver. Hannah Reif's going to be in this race. Trevor Huddleston, who's really big on the West Coast. Sean Hingarani, who is the ARCA West champion from last year. So she's going to have her hands full, but I think she's going to be capable and ready to go. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Really not much more to add to the discussion, so I guess I'll use my time to plug the race itself. If you're not familiar with the schedule, the General Tire 150 is going to be run on Friday night, as Brian said. That's March 8th. Coverage begins on Fox Sports 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern time. It's a 6 o'clock Phoenix time. Green flag to the race, but 8 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 to watch Isabella Robusto and the rest of the ARCA field race in the General Tire 150 at Phoenix Raceway this weekend.
Well, thank you, Mike. We did bring that up earlier, but it's good to bring that up here as well, so I appreciate you doing that. All right, Brian, do we have another hot topic to cover here?
Talked more than I thought was kind of cool, and I wanted to get people's thoughts on. Danielle Trotta put out a tweet. She's in an Uber last night out there in Phoenix, and the Uber driver was kind of asking what she did for a career, and she had kind of made the point that, you know, it's always been a kind of a struggle to describe NASCAR and what it's like to people, and hard to get people to want to commit to, you know, watching a 3.5-hour race or spending money on tickets or something they've never experienced. But what she really enjoys now is she's been mentioning, hey, we got this Netflix special going on. You know, you should check it out. She's like, you know, everyone thinks, you know, obviously Netflix, people are always looking for kind of the next show, the next big thing to watch. Everyone's heard of Netflix, right? Where maybe people aren't as familiar with NASCAR itself. She's really kind of enjoyed being able to put that out there and kind of promote the sport that way. And I kind of thought, oh, that is interesting. And then I'm just curious just to see people's thoughts, to get your guys' thoughts on what you thought of the special, if you've had a chance to watch it, the documentary, and kind of how you think that could potentially benefit NASCAR in the long run. I know I've seen some numbers on how their social media following's gone up since then and things like that. Hard to tell if that's directly related. Ratings have been a little bit tough to tell with Daytona being rained out and Atlanta being a different track than it was in the past. But, you know, ratings were up again last week a little bit, I think 9% or something like that. So I don't know if that's a Netflix effect or not, but I'm just curious to kind of get the crew's thoughts.
Okay, Mike. I know we've talked about this before, but it's worth talking about again.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, NASCAR's definitely had, I guess I could say it's an outreach problem over the past several years, right? Their presence in third-party media, and by that I mean media that's not exclusively about the races that are happening. So something like Race Hub on Fox Sports is not really third-party media, but a movie like Talladega Nights, for example, I would consider that to be third-party media, or Austin Dillon's reality show, stuff like that, really showing the sport off to people who may not be directly interested in it. I think they've really been lacking there, and especially in the messaging on there. I mentioned Talladega Nights. It's an entertaining movie, but I don't think it really portrays NASCAR in the best light. Kind of the overarching theme of the movie is, ha, 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 look at the dumb hicks. And I don't think that really casts the sport in the proper light as being a professional racing series that is populated by some of the best drivers in the world, and the cars are built and fielded by some of the best, most talented, hardworking engineers and mechanics in the entire world. And I think the Netflix series, it really goes and helps to highlight that. NBC Sports ran the Race for the Championship series a couple of years ago that did a similar thing, but unfortunately, due to some scheduling and promotion issues, I don't really think that they got the reach with that series that they were really hoping for, despite it being excellent. I really enjoyed that. As far as the Netflix series, I haven't had a chance to watch it myself. I don't have a Netflix account. I don't maintain one. I'm one of the few people, I guess, who doesn't share a password with somebody. So I haven't seen the Netflix series myself, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. With regard to the outreach for the sport, we saw a similar effect with Formula One several years ago with their Drive to Survive series, also on Netflix. Formula One saw a huge surge of interest in the U.S. market when it was really not the most not a very popular sport in the U.S. prior to that series. This year, we've seen a significant increase in ratings. Like Brian said, 9% up for Las Vegas over last year's race. Whether that's all due to the Netflix series or not, it's really impossible to say for sure. There's been an increase in interest in NASCAR in general over the past few years. So I don't know that I can attribute the entire ratings increase to Netflix. But then again, you know, 9% increase is great no matter where it comes from. And if a big chunk of that did come from Netflix, that's great. Whether NASCAR is able to continue to capitalize on that, I think, is an important piece. We've seen them drop the ball before of not really having the opportunity to capitalize on good exposure from previous times, right? We have the Netflix series this year, and then you'll follow it right up with that massive finish at Atlanta, I think really helped put the sport in front of a whole bunch of extra eyes. So NASCAR really needs to take that and run with it. What they do to run with it from there, I don't know. But trying to figure out how to tie that in, getting another, if they can get a second season of the Netflix series figured out and get it filmed and get it distributed, if not this year, sometime setting up for the 2025 season, I think those are ways NASCAR can help capitalize on it and can continue to ride and build that momentum going forward to continue to grow the sport. Obviously, some of these fans are going to be the seasonal, you know, they watch the Netflix thing, they get interested in it, and then that interest fades for a little while. But if we can capture at least a portion of those part-time, temporary, transient fans, if we can capture their attention and get them genuinely interested in the sport, where they are more than just a casual fan watching because they saw a series on Netflix, and they become that long-term fan going to the racetracks, buying the merchandise, et cetera, that's really what NASCAR needs to focus on is how to convert those temporary fans into permanent fans, and that should be their focus going forward.
Yeah, I think that the full speed Netflix series, try to say that five times fast, has been good for the sport. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think it's been a better depiction of what NASCAR is all about than some of the other things, as Mike alluded to with Talladega Nights. I would like to see them follow up with this year's chase to the championship, if you will, and do another season of Full Speed and feature maybe different drivers this time around, if it is indeed different drivers. If it ends up being the same drivers, that wouldn't be as much fun, I don't think. I think it would be a great way, though, to highlight some different drivers and follow their journey in that experience. It is hard to relate it, the increase in viewership specifically to the Full Speed docuseries that's at Netflix, but I got to believe that it had at least some part in that. NASCAR is doing a lot of different things in order to increase viewership, and so it's probably a combination of things that are making the difference. But I do applaud what they did with the Full Speed series, and I hope to see more of it. I don't know that there's a lot more that I can say about it. So, Brian, I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
No, I think all around you guys made some good points. And I think another thing that I enjoyed earlier this year is we saw, like, Chili's get involved in sponsorship with Coeur LaJoy and run a couple of, you know, just funny interactive ads, I thought. You know, it kind of brought me back to some of the earlier days where you had, you know, sponsors that were, I feel like, just not so many, like, business-to-business deals like we see now, but a lot more consumer-type product companies engaged. And I'd love to see, you know, more of that happen. Hopefully this was beneficial for Chili's. And, you know, just their little sponsorship of the Daytona 500, and I think they're an associate for three or four more races with Corey in the early part of the season. But I'd love to see more of that, and maybe that's something that kind of, you know, from our earlier point of, you know, getting some of these lower series to be more financially viable, something that could help as well. Definitely just getting, you know, NASCAR out in a little bit more of the mainstream Netflix has got to have some sort of positive benefit, I think. I think that, you know, I think that there were enough episodes there and kind of enough, I won't even say drama, but just enough interesting of a storyline to follow and make people think like, oh, maybe I will tune in. Maybe I will check that out, you know, and maybe you're not going to get a hardcore diehard fan out of it, but, you know, some more casual fans and things like that. So I think it can have nothing but a positive effect. I know they haven't officially said there's going to be a season two yet, but it sounds like there will be. And I think that, that'll be great.
Okay. Mike, your follow-up.
I really think this is an avenue that NASCAR should continue to pursue in terms of – I'm not sure who paid for what during the production of the Netflix series, whether NASCAR paid Netflix in order to put it on or Netflix paid NASCAR for access to the sport. It may just be a mutually beneficial kind of deal. But either way, I think this is where NASCAR's focus really should be in terms of their advertising and media spending and whatnot is – outreach, like spending money to run commercials for NASCAR during NASCAR races is probably the best move. They're kind of preaching to the converted, if nothing else. If you're watching a NASCAR race already, you probably don't want to see a 30-second advertisement for NASCAR. You'd rather see them go back to the race and show you the actual race that's going on. So that's kind of the spending priorities there that NASCAR should evaluate. What has gotten them results? Well, running commercials during the races, probably not the best result. But interacting and interfacing with a company like Netflix to produce a series like this very likely has had a significant, tangible, positive benefit to the sport. So figuring out how to continue down that road and find avenues like Netflix or similar in order to better promote the sport, I think is going to go a long way. We know that Amazon is coming on board as a streaming partner for NASCAR starting in the 2025 season. So potentially having something put together with Amazon Prime, because remember, Amazon Prime produces their own original series as well. They're a competitor for Netflix, so that may muddy the water a little bit as well for a season two of any kind of NASCAR-related content on Netflix, but that's a different discussion for a different time. But either way, being able to capitalize on having Amazon as a streaming service partner as well as a potential venue for some more NASCAR-related content, I think it would help NASCAR in the long run in terms of promoting the sport and exposing it to people who otherwise wouldn't necessarily see it. Just scrolling through the feed of what to watch, if they can have NASCAR content presented to them in an interesting way that gets them to actually watch the content, that may help promote the sport, get more eyes on it. And in addition to watching that the third-party content, as I like to call it, on Netflix or Amazon or wherever it may be, getting those people engaged to watch the actual races on TV, I think, is where it really helps. We talk a lot about sponsorship dollars, right? And why do sponsors sponsor race cars? Well, they want to get their advertisement and their logo out there in front of as many eyes as possible. And that's been part of the reason why revenue has been declining in NASCAR is because there have been fewer people watching on TV, fewer people in the grandstands who show up to the races. And that translates into fewer eyes that are on these sponsors' advertisements, whether they be on the car or the racetrack, wherever the sponsorship may choose to showcase their product. The more eyes that are on there, the better sales job that NASCAR can make to these sponsors to invest in the sport or increase their investment in the sport, whether it be to the individual teams or the series as a whole. So raising that viewership via Netflix or wherever else they may be able to do that, I think will have much bigger effects than just TV ratings. It could potentially translate into a better financial position for the teams as a whole.
Yeah, you guys make the point for stir. But I don't wanted to get into, you asked about who's behind it. The executive producers usually invest money when they're listed as executive producers with shows like this. So some of those executive producers include Connor Schaaf, Aaron Cohen, Ben Kennedy. He's an executive within NASCAR. Tim Clark, Matt Summers, Tally Hare, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. Has obviously invested in this as well. The production companies that were behind this were Word and Pictures, as well as NASCAR Studios. So they played a big role in putting that together for that Netflix docuseries, Full Speed. But I have to agree with a lot of what you guys said. I wish I could find some facts and figures to support what we're saying, because we're all speculating how good this has been for the sport. And I think it has been, but I can't seem to find any facts and figures to back up that speculation. I would like to know what the viewership of those shows have been. They've got them listed over here on Wikipedia, each of the episodes, Playoffs or Bust, Another Gear, One Last Push, Not in the Plan, Across the Line. But I have not been able to find what the viewership has been for that. I've got to think, though, and again, I'm speculating because we don't have any facts or figures to back us up, that there probably have been a few new eyes that have been exposed to the sport through that series. I'd like to see the stats on that. I'd like to know how many of our regular NASCAR fans, how many of them took the time to watch those five episodes. That's my only complaint here, is that we don't have any facts and figures to back up our speculation. And I wish there was some articles or something that we can find that kind of substantiates what we're saying. But other than that, I think it feels like it's all been good. So, Brian, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, you wrapped that up well and kind of said it in terms I love as well. I love facts and figures to back up what I say, obviously a big numbers guy, but I think probably maybe see some of that roll in here after it's been out for a little bit as well. I'm sure especially if it's doing well, I don't think NASCAR won't hesitate to put out a press release letting everyone know how well it's doing. So hopefully we'll see some numbers kind of roll out here in the next, you know, few weeks or month or so.
Okay. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. Mike, why don't you be the first to do our roundtable for wrap-up?
Sure, not a problem. It's going to be Mike_ZLNX, Mike_O on Reddit. Looking forward to the racing this weekend at Phoenix Raceway. Should be an interesting race. We get to see the new short track package in action, so I'm hopeful that some of the changes that NASCAR made during the offseason, we didn't really get a chance to talk about it today, but they have made some changes to the car in the interest of improving short track racing. It's a, you know, 1 mile and less track. Phoenix is going to be our first chance to see this new racing package in action. So hopefully we can see an improvement upon some of the short track racing that has been kind of lacking in the Gen 7 era, to be honest. Hopefully that changes this weekend at Phoenix, and I'm going to be watching for it.
Yeah, just so you know, Mike, we did discuss that earlier in the show during the preview part of the show, and Brian gave some specifics of what that new package is. And we did talk about how that's going to be a big thing to watch this weekend on the short track. So thank you for bringing that up again. Brian?
Yeah, Brian Eberle, best way to follow is BEberle18 on Twitter, or what some people call X these days. Definitely looking forward to this weekend of racing. I'm going to think I love the size of the ARCA field at Phoenix. I think it'll be great. Very excited to see what the new short track package is going to do with the cup level at Phoenix. And then also excited that we don't cover IndyCar really on this show, but IndyCar kicks off their season on Sunday as well. So we've got that Cars Tour race. It's already been postponed from Saturday until Sunday on Slow Racing. So have a chance to get all three TVs up and running in action this weekend with the Cup race, the IndyCar race, the Car Tours race, and probably some spring training baseball. So looking forward to a good weekend of sports, and looking forward to talking about it all again with you guys next Thursday.
Brian, I'm so envious of you having those three screens that you can watch all kinds of things at the same time.
Maybe one of the best life decisions I've ever made, actually.
Okay, that's fantastic. I am Fan for Racing Psych on Twitter. I still call it Twitter. It'll always be Twitter to me. And Fan for Racing Blog and Radio, Facebook, as well as our website, fanforracing.com. I am also looking forward to seeing how this short track package works out for NASCAR. So far, there's been positives about it. It seems like it's going to do the trick, but you never know until you actually see all the cars on track and see how it works with in under racing conditions. So that's going to be the big storyline, I think, going into the weekend, as well as what actually happens on the track. So we'll see how that plays out. Again, Arkham and Art Series is back on track, so I'm excited about that. The season opener for the ARCA West Series, as well as the second race for the Arkham and Art Series, all at Phoenix Raceway tomorrow night. So that's going to be a big story, as well as the Xfinity and the Cup Series and their races, their respective races on Saturday and Sunday. Full weekend of racing, to say the least. And I can't wait to see how it plays out, as well as the review of the racing on our show Monday night for our regular time slot at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 Central, and going over everything with South the Gala on Monday night. So can't wait to see what happens at Phoenix this weekend. With that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a wrap.
Have a great week.
Okay, take care, everybody. Enjoy your race weekend.